Five, four, three, two, one. Boom, and we're live. Mr. Bisping, how are you, sir?
What's up, Joe? I'm good.
We finally did this, man.
I know. We've been talking about it for
years.
Feels like a lifetime.
It's been quite a while, man.
Yeah. But happy to be here. Quite the setup you have.
As an Englishman, please explain to me the Hawaiian flag. What the fuck is the Hawaiian flag?
Straight off the bat, I'm like,
I was confused. I was looking at it the other day when Max Holloway won. I was like, if you didn't know any better and you looked at that, you're like, this is some strange British flag.
Right off the bat, I'm like, Joe's a smart guy. I've seen the podcast. He goes deep on things. I'm like, do I need to read some encyclopedias before I come on here? And the first thing you say is, explain the British flag, sorry, the Hawaiian flag.
What is that?
Well,
it's like a British
flag. I can't claim to be
an
expert on the history of Hawaii. I failed that class, funnily enough. Mm. But I would say that we colonized it at one point, much like America. Right. I don't know if you know this. Much like
you guys
Australia, India.
Yeah, Australia's got a funky flag,
too,
right?
You know, we like to insert the Union Jack in lots of things.
And you think about the size of England, how much of the world you guys kicked ass on. It's pretty goddamn impressive.
It really is, but again, I'm no historian.
No.
But no, it is. I'm a proud Englishman. I guess our ancestors, well, not my ancestors. My ancestors are Polish and Irish. But yeah, the British, they did okay.
Did a lot of shit. Got a lot done.
They did. You know, I was at a, they did a lot of terrible things, I'm sure, over the years.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I remember
once I was in Canada at a party, of all things, about 3 o'clock in the morning, as one does. And I walk in and some guy starts going crazy at me. The things that the British have done over the years, you should be ashamed of yourself. And he was causing a huge scene, really screaming at me, right? And I mean, going crazy. And I'm like, dude, what the fuck? Nothing to do with me. He's like, you should be ashamed. So in the end, I said, well, where's your family from? And you're not going to believe this. He said,
Mongolian.
Germany.
Oh.
I'm like, fucking, you're a German. You're a German and you're giving me shit about my heritage. Okay, buddy, I suggest you shut the fuck up.
That's pretty hilarious because when you think about the history, the Germans way more recent.
Oh, yeah, just a little bit, a little bit.
The English stuff is in the past.
Nothing.
Let it go.
Come on.
That's like with swords and arrows and shit.
Yeah, Robin Hood times. Come on. You know?
Do you like living over here?
Yeah, very much so. You know, I mean, of course, you know, you miss home, you miss friends and family. Certainly, you know, as you get older and your parents get older, you know, you do think about those things. But yeah, it's great. It's a great place to live.
Your accent has tamed itself a bit.
Well,
when you go back home, do they give you shit about it?
I get shit all the time, yeah. All the time. And they're like, what's this weird accent, Mike? And it's like this. I'm intelligent enough to adapt to the surroundings that I'm in. You know, like I'll now say tomatoes instead of tomatoes because I don't want a cute little back and forth for 5 minutes with the fucking waitress. Do you know what I mean? I just want to order my breakfast and go about my day. Oh my God, you're English? You know what I mean? So I'll say tomato, I'll say coffee. But when I go back home, it kind of, you know, and then working on Fox, they worked on me for a while. They're like, Mike, we think we like what you're saying. The problem is we can't understand what you're saying. It seems like it's good stuff. There's lots of energy there, but you got to slow down, overpronounce your words. So it is a little bastardized.
Have you thought about doing commentary on UFC cards? Have you done any of those yet?
I've just done the Contender Series.
That's it.
But I think it's, well, I know it, well, it should be coming up. Just negotiated a deal with Zach. So,
well, yeah. That's good to hear.
Yeah, you know.
Because you're really excellent as an analyst.
Well, thank you very much.
I really
appreciate that.
Enjoy your insight when you're on the panel. That panel's great. That is one of the best things the UFC's done, is do that post-fight show. Because when the fights are over, you're sitting around going, fuck, holy shit.
Yeah.
And then to have you guys break it down, and then break it down beforehand as well, but break it down afterwards. I really do enjoy that.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, the guys do a good job. It's fun. You know, I mean, it's nice to be involved with the sport, obviously, as a martial artist, as a fighter, and then now retired, to still, you know, still have a little hand in there. It's nice, yeah.
But you've made a smooth transition from being a fighter to retired. Mm. It seems, at least from the outside looking in, that it seems fairly smooth. It's like some guys have a rocky road. It's hard for them.
Well, it's because, you know, I mean, I want to tell the truth while I'm on here, so I will tell the truth, but, you know, I had eye injuries,
yeah.
You know, so, you know, from when the eye injuries happened in 2013, I always felt like I was on borrowed time. So I was conscious of trying to set myself up outside of the octagon, where a lot of fighters don't have that luxury, you know. I'm thinking it could end at any moment, so I was actively pursuing a life outside the octagon, a career outside the octagon. So then when that day came, I was good, you know. Excuse me. Some carbonated energy drink that shall remain nameless. I was working on that for a while. And yeah, you know, things are going well. You know, there's quite a lot of things going on. So
You do that podcast with Luis Gomez.
Got the podcast, believe you me. I've got a company called Playline.
What is that?
It's a gambling. It's fancy sports, but it's fancy sports simplified. Basically, it's kind of like a sports lottery. So if we were focusing on the UFC, who's going to win? What round? How many takedowns? We do 5 stats. You hit them bang on, you get $1 billion. We had the analytics groups at Harvard and Yale come up with a league. So the top 50 people split a rake.
If you hit everything, you get $1 billion?
You get $1 billion.
A B?
Boom. $1 billion, baby. We give away $1 million every single day. Playline.com. Boom.
Wow.
There it is.
$1 billion in prizes available in our first year.
And it's blowing up. It's blowing up big time. Wow. We're just about to sign a deal with a couple of major sports franchises to be their official game. So
wow.
So that's going really well.
So it's essentially like a fantasy martial arts thing. Like you just pick.
No, it's NASCAR, football, oh. MMA. The beauty of Playline is you can set a Playline to anything. Like we can set a Playline. How many times is Bisping going to burp? How many times is he going to get up and have a piss? How many times is Rogan going to roll his eyes at Mike? You know, no, do you know what I mean? You can set it for anything. So it's very applicable. How many likes is Kim Kardashian going to get in her next post? You know what
really?
I mean? So it's, we're getting a lot of traction. It's doing really, really well. Very proud of it.
I would think if it's $1 billion, I would think it'd be like some Guy Ritchie movie where some mobsters would get together with some fighters and say,
yeah.
This is how we're going to do it, see?
Try and
You're
fix it.
You're going down 3 times.
Okay, I've never heard an English gangster sound like they're from like 1920s Chicago.
Yeah,
see? This is what we're going to do, see?
This is what we're going to do, see?
But yeah, I guess... No, is that hasn't
is
no,
that
nobody's
possible?
Cheated yet.
Well, you know, the reason why I say
thanks
this
thanks for totally undermining the system, Joe. Really appreciate it.
The reason why I say this is because this is what happened with professional pool. Professional pool had a line at one point in time in Vegas casinos, and the pool players all got together and said, listen, let's fucking put all our money on this guy who's the 10-1 favorite to win it, or 10-1 underdog to win it, and we'll all make money. And so they all dumped, and this one guy, I think his name is Mike LeBron, he won the whole thing.
The only way you could do that is if there was no stats. No stats.
Right.
So if it was a game of basketball, everyone would just have to stand there and do nothing.
Right.
Which I would assume, I mean, right. I don't know too yeah. much about basketball, but I would assume athletic commissions, referees.
People get involved.
Somebody would say something if everyone was just standing there doing nothing.
Well, they did with pool. You can't gamble on pool anymore.
Oh, really?
Pool players are too shady.
Mm.
Yeah, they just...
Well, they are.
They're shady.
They're shady guys.
Yeah,
you know,
are.
Anyone that plays pool in England, it's because they spend so much time in pubs.
Exactly.
You spend so much time in pubs, mm-hmm. you're hanging out with some interesting characters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Unsavory characters.
Dude, you started at UFC Ultimate Fighter Season 2. How crazy is
3.
That? What, were you Season 3?
3.
What season are they on now? Like 90 or some shit? Like what are they on?
I think they just did 28.
That
28, but that's
fucking crazy.
But that's only US. They have the Brazilian one. They have the Australian.
Diego Sanchez is still fucking going at it. That's what's insane. Season
that's impressive.
One. Season 1.
He's a maniac. God bless him. You know, good for him. Good for him.
And he fucking won recently, which is even impressive.
No, I know. And he fights in a way that isn't conducive to a long career.
No.
But he's had one. My word.
It's
incredible.
Insane.
It really is. It really is. He's a warrior.
Such a fucking character, too.
Oh, dude. He's out of his mind.
Yeah.
In a good way, I mean.
In
you know,
a great
I mean that as
yeah.
a compliment.
I do as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's a maniac. But, I mean, that guy, Season 1, and still
yeah.
going strong.
No, I know. Crazy. It's been a long ride for myself as well, but enjoyed it. Enjoyed every minute of it. It was great.
It's nice to leave having won the title, though, right?
Oh, 100%.
Oh, how nice is that to cap it off? Because you had such a long career, man. I mean, you fought the best of the best, and for you to cap it off, knocking out Luke Rockhold... And then having that, like,
oh,
no one could take that away from you forever.
No, for sure. You know, I mean, I was talking about this recently. I'm filming a documentary called Built for This, and it's about my career. And they were asking about that, you know, how would you feel? Excuse me. this carbonating energy drink that shall remain nameless.
Energy drink. Is it called Creature or something like that?
Creature or Demon. something like that. Mythological.
Scary.
Where was it? Yeah, scary. Scary monster. There you go. No, they were asking about my fight career. How would I have felt had I not won the belt? And, you know, I mean, it would have felt like it was unfinished business. Mm. I wouldn't have been quite as content as walking away when I did, had I not won the belt.
Other than winning the belt and winning the Ultimate Fighter, I'm sure, but what was your most satisfying victory? Was it Kung Lee?
No. I don't know. My most satisfying victory, my word. Oh, Anderson Silva.
Anderson Silva.
Yeah, that was a big one for me. Yeah,
that was a big one, too, because of the cheap knee.
It was cheap.
It was cheap.
I'm glad
cheap.
You said that.
It was cheap. I mean, I'm a giant Anderson Silva fan.
Yeah, you don't, everybody is.
You don't get any bigger Anderson Silva fan than me. But you didn't have your mouthpiece. You were pointing to the mouthpiece. You were separated, and you took a pause, and you thought the referee was going to separate you and give you back your mouthpiece, and Anderson comes in with the knee.
Well, I know the rules. There has to be a lull in the action for the referee to step in, you know, and I'm backing up, and we're not engaging in blows. To me, that's a lull in the action.
Yeah.
So I take that moment to point down over here and say my mouthpiece, and as I'm down there, boom, he throws a beautiful knee. It was beautiful, it really was.
Perfectly timed.
Yeah, and good for him, you know. I don't hold it against the guy.
But you fucking came back.
Yeah.
Like
it
Lazarus.
Wasn't easy. It wasn't fucking easy, I tell you that. That took every part of my will to continue, but yeah.
But you came back and won the next round.
Mm-hmm.
That was what was spectacularly impressive.
But that's what you said, what is the most satisfying win? And I'd say that was one of them. Of course, you know, beating Rockhold and winning the belt, nothing tops that.
But that would be the big one, too, because you came in on short notice as well.
Sure. But the Anderson one, because of that, you know, it just made the storyline so much better.
Yeah.
You know, to fight through that adversity, to, you know, have to dig deep. After winning it, you know, I won the first, dropped him in the second round, third round, I was winning, then that happened. So, yeah, no, it felt good. It felt good.
Yeah, that was that. I mean, that also, like, to get a victory over that guy, when it all said and done, there's some...
Yeah, listen, I'm aware of that people would say, oh, but you didn't get Anderson in his prime. Well, maybe it wasn't his prime, but with the amount of shit that I talked, I certainly see a difference in the way he fought me to the way he's fought recently, you know? And it's funny because people always say, oh, you're not worried that when you talk shit going into a fight that you're going to motivate your opponent even more. And I always used to say, ah, no, don't be stupid. Listen, they're going to try and hit you as hard as they can. But I don't know. In that one, I think it did motivate Anderson because he was certainly not fucking about in that one, that's for sure.
No, you were...
It wasn't like the Anderson and the Derek Brunson fight, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was a different fight, right? Derek Brunson and him almost looked like they made an agreement.
They didn't fight.
Yeah, it was a weird fight.
Yeah.
It's like it Derek Brunson didn't want to risk anything, didn't want to engage with him too quickly or go too hard. But then you see some of his fights, he comes at you like a fucking marauder.
Who?
Derek Brunson.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I was talking about this recently with the Israel Adesanya fight, and I think I kind of pissed Israel off with a couple of my comments, and that wasn't my intention. I said, excuse me, I don't know if I'm completely sold on Israel yet, and what I meant by that, I didn't mean sold on him being a great fighter, because he's clearly a great fighter, he's clearly world class. What I meant was sold on him being the future of the division and being the champion. That's what I meant, because Brunson never showed up in that fight.
Right.
And I mean that with the greatest of respect. He was like a deer in the headlights. You know, he was intimidated. He'd just been knocked out of Jacare. You know, I was a little gun shy. You know, and it was a great performance. Israel did what he needed to do. But as I say, you know, it takes two to tango, and there was only Israel really fighting in that fight. So when I said those comments, I said, oh, I'm not entirely sold on that fight. That's what I meant. I didn't mean because I don't think he's world-class or an excellent fighter, because he clearly is. I just meant not sold on that fight, whether or not he's the future of the division.
Well, it's a stacked fucking division. I mean, look, I mean, you still have Yoel Romero at the top of the heap. I don't know what they're doing with him. I mean, he was supposed to be fighting... Bohachina.
Paulo Costa.
Bohachina. Yeah, who's a fucking monster. If anybody is who's not on steroids, who looks like they're on steroids, it's him and Yoel Romero.
They're all on fucking steroids. Well, it's not that easy these days with USADA, but come on, some of them are on steroids.
some of them probably are.
Joe.
But who's on?
Okay. You're telling me that you don't believe that Yoel Romero ever took a steroid in his life?
I didn't say that.
Okay.
I definitely didn't say that. I think it's possible. It's totally possible.
How's that fence you're sitting on? I get it. But it's a tough scenario for you to be in.
UFC commentator. I'm fucking honest, bro. Yeah. If I believe it, I'll say it.
And let's not forget he tested positive. There was that whole anytime somebody says it was a tainted supplement, it's bullshit.
You never tested positive for anything.
Never tested positive in my life. Let me tell you something. I'm not a guy that scours the back of everything I read. I'm a careless motherfucker. I really am. I wish I wasn't, but I am. I'll just go through my life doing what I do. I've been tested a million times, never come close. Okay? Some of the guys, they blow up the lab, you know? There's no smoke without fire. You know what I'm saying?
I agree with you. I remember there was talk years back, before USADA, there was talk of certain camps that would hire guys who knew testing. And these guys would orchestrate a program for these fighters to make sure that they didn't get caught. And that they would figure out ways to, you know, to taper off, but still keep your gains and make sure that you didn't test positive at all. And this was done under the assumption that everyone else was cheating as well. And this was, for a long time, that was how a lot of people viewed the sport. There was guys like you, BJ Penn, there was a few guys that you just knew weren't going to do anything. It was their word. They said they were never going to do anything.
Sure.
And they never looked like they did anything. You always maintain the exact same physique throughout your entire career.
Well, the thing is, I think where it started getting a little weird, and I don't want to bang on about steroids too much because that's been a narrative that I've I've said my piece about that.
Right.
I don't want to, you know, bang on about it too much. But I think where the waters really got murky is when TRT came in.
Yes.
When testosterone replacement therapy became a thing, and all you had to do was go to your doctor and said, hey, you know, I can't get a hard on or whatever. And all of a sudden, they sign you off on TRT. No, I know.
Even worse, you could take steroids first and then come off of it so your testosterone was low.
Oh, really?
And you go to a doctor and say, I have low testosterone.
Oh, of course, yeah, because it messes up your natural production of it.
This is what guys did. Guys took steroids and then went in afterwards and said they have low testosterone because they were on steroids.
Sure, no, exactly. So then it became legal. And then you had all these guys coming out there saying, you know, if I'm not on TRT, I'll die. I'll die. Mm-hmm. And then they outlawed it and then 10 years later, some of them are still fighting to this day.
Yes.
You know, so without naming names, you know who you are. Shame on you.
Well, but we've talked about TRT Belfort, TRT Vitor Belfort forever. Yeah. I mean, that was when he was on TRT, he was a different kind of human being. Mm. He was just completely different than he is in any other circumstance.
Oh, yeah. Looking back, you can see that. I mean, because when I fought him on TRT.
You fought him when he was at the super Vitor level.
Absolutely. He looked like fucking the Incredible Hulk.
He had muscles on his fucking eyebrows.
Yeah, looking back, you can see that, you know. But at the time, as a fighter, you can't think like that. You know what I mean?
What are you looking at? Oh.
That doesn't even do it justice.
No, that doesn't do it justice. Nah. That's supposed to be before and after.
I'm just recovering from a cold at the weekend. I'm a little congested, so I keep coughing.
The real key
that's
is
a better one.
That's better. That's way better. That's much more accurate. And he's a guy who was known to take things. I mean, he took things early in his career. Remember when he fought Randy when he was 19? He was 240 pounds.
Yeah, exactly.
His neck started at the top of his head.
Yeah, but I remember there was a picture of us both on the scale in Brazil.
Mm.
And, you know, looking back now, you go, holy shit. You know, anyone else would think, oh, have you seen this guy? He's kind of big, blah, 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 blah. But you don't think like that at the time. You can't as a fighter. If you start having those thoughts, those doubts, you start looking at a fighter's physique and thinking, oh, he looks good.
Mm.
You've already lost, you know. But in hindsight, you can look back and say, holy fuck, what was I thinking? You know, this guy's fucking roided out of his mind. I remember on there, I was trying to get a rise out of him and he kept putting his hand in my face. I'm not a religious guy and you know, God bless anyone that is, you know, I mean that. I respect everyone's opinions, but I'm not. And as we know, Vitor is heavily religious and he kept sticking his thing in my face. He was pissing me off. So I said, Vito, come here, come here. And he leans in. I said, there is no Jesus. maybe there is. Maybe there is. You know, me getting dropped with a head kick in the second round. Maybe that was God thwarting me. Who knows?
What did he say?
Some fucking Portuguese bullshit. I don't know.
Oh, there is the fine line, right, between talking shit and backing it up.
Yeah.
But you know, you did a great job of pissing people off in your career, and that plays a factor. That whatever you can do to get just them a little bit out of their comfort zone, a little bit out of their composure, and you were really good at that.
Yeah, I mean, I hate that to be the first thing people say about me, but you know.
It was what
I did, and in my mind, you know, where I come from, my background, you know, if we're gonna fight, then we're gonna fight, and right. then it's all out war, you know, until it's all said and done. And if I can make you doubt yourself, if I can, you know, it's like at the weigh-ins, that's the last time you're gonna get a chance to stand in front of your opponent mm-hmm. and send a message to him, you know what I mean? And if you get in his face and you can just instill a little fear, puff your chest. That's why animals do it in the wild.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Puff your chest out, look intimidating, look as angry as you can, you know. And some fighters might just look at that and laugh and say, this ain't going to work on me. But some it does.
Yeah. So,
and then they don't fight to the best of their ability because they're slightly doubting themselves and they're not fully committing to the punch or the kick. And if they're not fully committing, they're not 100%, they're not fighting as well as they can be, and I'm winning that battle. You know, so yeah, you look like kind of a thug standing up there and pointing your finger and talking shit, but it's for a reason, you know?
It works.
Yeah, it does. McGregor's the best at it, you know, he gets people to fold. Look at Dustin Poirier, he didn't even show up in that first fight.
It's true. Yeah,
don't get me wrong, he was great as well. You know, it wasn't just the trash talk.
No, he's great as well. I think the Nate Diaz fight, didn't work in that fight.
Yeah.
Nate doesn't give a fuck.
Doesn't give a fuck, there you go.
Doesn't work.
Exactly, it doesn't work.
You talk shit at him, he's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
And like, it doesn't make him feel bad at all.
Yeah,
he enjoys it.
Yeah,
I think
it
makes him feel comforting.
Yeah,
I'm used to this, just
another day at the office, you know?
Yeah. It's a thing. Like, a lot of people would wish that fighters were respectful and just, you know, treated it
well,
the martial arts way, and bow to each other.
And that's great. It is. You know, it's funny. I was working out this morning, and the gym manager, he said, you know, I said, I feel like that side of things kind of, you know, it's killing the UFC. And I said, shut the fuck up. I'm like, you know, I nodded away and, like, you know, was respectful to the guy.
Yeah.
But I see his point. I understand what he's saying, but it's entertainment and it gets people. That's another reason why I used to do it. You're trying to sell the fight, you know. You want every product you're involved with to be as popular as possible, whether it's a podcast, whether it's fighting, whether it's whatever it is. If no one's watching, no one gives a fuck, then you're not going to make much money. You're not going to get booked again. You're not going to be on the big cards.
Yeah.
You talk a little. I know from a consumer standpoint. If I'm watching a fight, I mean, look at that last week with Fury and Wilder.
Yeah.
You know, I was eating out the palm of their hands. I mean, it was an amazing fight. But, you know, it hypes it. It's great. It's awesome to watch. I mean, yes, it is beautiful to see two fighters walk up there and bow and shake hands and all the rest of it. But it's also a little fucking boring, if I'm honest. Like, when I'm working the Wayne shows, I'm like, give me something to talk about, please. You know, because I don't want to talk about your boring last fight that went to a split decision when nothing really happened. But if you get in their face at the Wayne, great, we can pump it up a little bit. We can sell the fight. We can hype it up.
Yeah, when they have these press conferences and no one's being mean at all, I mean, half the fun is talking shit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I'm enjoying myself. I'm in my element up there. It's like, you know, the famous one with GSP when he was like, are you intoxicated?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, well, yeah, I am. Well, yeah, I am. I'm in Vegas. What do you want me to do? You know, you don't want to fight until the end of the year and it's January. Okay.
Right.
If we were fighting in 2 months, I wouldn't be intoxicated. But right now I am, you know, so yeah.
Well, there's been some hilarious moments in press conferences. I mean, the one, the giant one with the UFC where Jeremy Stevens calls out to Conor and Conor goes, who the fuck is that guy?
I mean, that was hilarious. That was great. It really was good. Honestly, every time I see that, I do laugh. It was great.
All he had to say.
Yeah.
All he had to say.
Who the fuck is that guy? But I don't know. But I think he was actually serious.
He might have been.
Who the fuck is this guy? But calling me out, talking shit.
I'm sure he knows who Jeremy Stevens is.
I don't know.
You don't think so?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
I don't know everybody up there sometimes at press conferences.
Yeah, you can't.
You know what I mean?
The UFC has more than 500 fighters on their roster.
Exactly.
Yeah. Especially when they have those giant press conferences and there's many levels of
fighters.
There's
like 16 fighters up there.
It's impossible.
Exactly.
I like both. I like when fighters are respectful, and I like when fighters talk shit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I did enjoy, it was nice to see Brian Ortega and Max Holloway. Mm-hmm. They had that nice back and forth where Brian was, you know, he's like, listen, I hope you're well, and I hope you're over the injuries and all that type of thing. That was nice to see. It was great. But they both were exuding confidence at the same time. They were both adamant they were going to win the fight. So it wasn't they weren't being too overly cordial.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
I don't want to see that.
Right.
I don't want to I don't want to see two fighters pretending like they're in church or meeting the fucking president. Okay? Yeah. I want to see two guys that want to rip each other's head off.
Yeah.
Call me an animal. Call me a barbarian. Call me whatever you want. But that's what gets my, you know, engine ticking.
Well, even when they were at the final weigh-in and they're staring each other down, like, even though it was respectful, there was a lot of tension. There's a lot of tension. You knew what
you're talking about
Max
at the weigh-in.
Brian.
Yeah, I never saw that one.
When they were at the weigh-in, and Max and Brian, they just stood, you know, a couple feet away from each other, staring at each other, and it was intense. It was real.
Mm.
That was a fucking hell of a fight, too.
Yeah. Max was incredible.
Shit. He's incredible.
He really is. Really is. I mean, I was kind of not concerned, and of course,
you were the one who initially threw up the red flag when you saw him. You just felt like. He looked too tired, or what?
Well, he was slurring
think?
His words. He looked half asleep.
Right.
He looked like he just got out of bed. That's how he looked. And then he was slurring his words. And then, so I just said, "You okay, Max? Everything good?" And he's just like, you know.
Yeah.
He was slurring, simple as that. And I'm like, and of course, UFC tonight, you have a production meeting. We go over the questions we're going to ask. So you've got the questions there in front of you. And I thought, I can't stick to these questions. I've got to ask this guy, are you okay, you know?
Good for you. I'm glad you did that.
Well, you know, I felt bad afterwards because then I heard that the fight was off and then I thought, shit, if I'd gone on, you know, 2 days, 3 days out from a fight, if I'd gone on fucking UFC tonight or whatever, just doing my obligations as a fighter, and then another fighter on the roster is calling me out for an injury, and now the fight's off, I'd have been pissed off with them.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe, you know, that's my choice if I want to highlight it. So I felt a little bad, but I really respected Max. He sent me a message thanking me. You know, he said, thank you. He said, he said, I appreciate that. I needed someone to do that because he knew he wasn't 100%. So anyway, I was saying I wasn't fully convinced that he was okay because it seemed like he was, I don't know, still slurring his words or whatever. But
He's kind of a mumbler.
He's a mumbler, yeah. So am I, you know. Yeah. He was fine, though. He was more than fine.
More than fine.
He looked insane.
Insane.
So good.
And Ortega fired back. Ortega hit him with some big shots.
Third round, hit him with a couple of big shots.
At the end of the third round, he's like, this is my round.
Yeah, no, I saw that. Yeah, I told you. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Fucking cardio, man. His cardio is incredible.
Through the roof, you know. Excellent footwork combinations, cuts angles well. Reads the fight. That's the main thing. You know what I mean? He reads the fight. So
he reads the fight, and he's so good at implementing that strategy of like consistent pressure, constant angles, switching stances, and he switches stances flawlessly. Fights just as good southpaw as he does orthodox, and he'll switch in the middle of a combination, and then turn corners on you.
Absolutely.
That's right.
He's not there to be counted.
He's fucking amazing, man.
Really good.
And when you hit him back, he like claps. He's good.
Yeah,
good,
no,
good.
For sure.
Keep
well,
going.
Remember against Ricardo Lamas?
Yeah.
And he just pointed at the floor. He's like, come on, let's go right here. Let's stand and bang it out.
Yeah, he's a wild motherfucker. That was awesome.
Yeah, it really was.
You know, it's great to see that he is okay, too. But I'm really happy that you did point that out because there was some issues. And I think a lot of that probably had to do, I'm just speculating, but probably had to do with that massive weight cut. I mean, he was trying to get down really quickly to 155, which is crazy, right? Because he fights at 145. He's the champion. And even struggling to go down from he was in the 180s to get down to 155 quickly to fight
for the Khabib fight. Yeah.
Because they offered it to him on last minute.
Sure.
You know, when Tony tore his knee apart. Was that on set with you guys? Were you there that day?
I wasn't there. No. But yeah, it was in the studios, yeah.
What a fucking freak occurrence.
That was crazy.
Trips over some wires, blows his knee apart.
What was it? The fight had been matched 3 times.
Yeah.
And then they're almost there. They're at the finish line doing the final bit of press. Yeah, it's crazy.
It trips
you
over
can't
some
write
wire.
That. It's, no. It's insane.
You can't.
It's in such bad luck. It's like those guys are destined to never fight.
Oh, they've got to fight now. If I could wave a wand in any match I want in that division, that's the match.
Oh, for sure. Well, it's the fight that has to happen. Yeah. You know, I mean, Tony is, in my mind, still the interim champion.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
I have no idea why they stripped him. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Listen, Tony's, you know, he's a character, shall we say.
Yeah, he is a character.
He's a unique character. But he, in my mind, he fought for the interim title. He won the interim title. And then he fucking blew his knee out.
Yeah.
You know, so...
He blew his knee out doing press obligations. He didn't do anything stupid.
No, exactly.
That's why I didn't understand that they stripped him. Mm. I was like, this guy, I mean, the guy's ready to fight.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And then a few months later, he was ready to go again. He beats the shit out of Pettis.
Yeah. No. And he looked incredible.
Yeah.
See, I was kind of concerned in that fight as well because it was so fast coming back. And I thought.
So fast.
And apparently he was doing his own rehab and doing all these wild techniques. And you saw that stuff online that he was doing. I thought, this guy's going to hurt himself again. But no, he went out there and looked amazing.
Apparently,
he really
didn't even do any sparring.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, I need to find this out for sure from him, but the word I'm getting from people that know him is that he didn't spar. He just got it in incredible shape, and he said, look, this knee is healing up. It's in the process of healing, and during his camp, it was continuing to heal. And the way he kept that going is don't do any takedowns. Don't get your knee wrenched.
Mm.
Don't get leg kicked.
Well, sparring is the hardest part of preparing for a fight, of course. You know, well, and the wrestling. Wrestling and sparring, they're the toughest. Probably wrestling practice, actually. But
find a wrestler who doesn't have fucked up knees.
Yeah, my knees are fucked. Not that I'm a wrestler, far from it, but my knees are just destroyed. Destroyed.
Meniscus mostly?
Well, I think I have a torn meniscus on my good knee right now. That's my good knee. But my bad knee... actually, GSP, the son of a bitch, he caused it back at... I was training for the Ultimate Fighter 3 final, and I was training with George, and we were training, you know, Zufa, the old Zufa headquarters, they had that little gym at the bottom with the boxing ring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were wrestling in there, and my knee hit the floor, tore my PCL, and then just, I don't know, one thing after the other, you know. That was, what, 12 years ago?
And it's just always been kind of fucked?
Yeah, well... I'm sitting here right now. When we finish, when I stand, I'll limp like crazy because when I sit here like this, it just seizes up like crazy. So if I'm in a restaurant, I stand up and I walk like a moron. If I'm going to the bathroom, everyone's like, fucking look at this guy. Jesus Christ. But then I walk back and I'm walking in fine. They're like, this attention-seeking bastard forgot that he put on a fake limp when he went to the bathroom. I'm like, no, it's unseized now. It's okay. Yeah. It's just when I first stand up. Yeah, a popliteal cyst. I think that's what's causing that right now.
Oh, so there's a cyst in there?
I think so, yeah.
You can
well,
get
no,
that
there is.
Drained.
Yeah, no, I know.
Yeah, I've had cysts on my right knee. Yeah. I've had them drained twice.
Yeah, I've got to get that done.
It's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, it is.
The last time they just went in there and just pulverized it, went in there and just kept sticking it with needles.
Oh,
and,
really? Yeah. Yeah, I've got to get it done. I've got to get that. I've got to get a lot of shit done.
Pus.
Yeah. My neck issue. Remember we were talking years ago in Manchester about my neck. Yeah, I never got that taken care of.
I mean, people didn't know, but it was hard for me to talk about it. I didn't want to talk about it too much while I was commentating your fights, but you had a neck injury that was so bad, one of your arms was weaker than the other. Like, if you were doing bench press...
Oh, for sure, still to this day.
Really?
I mean, you could take that samurai sword, I don't advise it, and stick it through the skin there, and I wouldn't feel a thing.
Really?
Well, I don't know if I wouldn't feel a thing, but I'm totally numb. Totally numb. I had a shower after my workout before, and then what I get a lot, I get like the, it's like I
stinger.
Yeah, but down the entire right side.
Yeah,
I was in the shower. I was. It's happened a few times when I've been working on TV. I was doing this show called Hyperdrive for Netflix in the summer, and it was night shoots. It was like 4 a.m, and all of a sudden, I'm doing this. And everyone's going, "Oh my god!" I'm like, "It's okay, calm down." They're like, "Medic." I'm like, "No, it's okay. It happens all the time." So yeah, it's just pinched nerve, you know, C5, C6. I got to get it taken care of.
Have you ever done any decompression or anything like that?
It's all my own fault.
Mm-hmm.
I'm too old school. I need to go in and have treatment on my body, but it's like. It's a whole thing, Joe.
Yeah,
I'm a busy man.
I understand.
I haven't got an afternoon to go sit and, you know, get massaged or decompressed. Or I need to do it. I need to do it. And this year, 2019, is the year that I get all these little... Because my quality of life is still fine, you know what I mean?
Right.
I just grin and bear it and whatever, and just occasionally have a mini heart attack. you know, I'll be okay, I'm fine. But eventually, this is the year. I'm going to get all these little niggles taken care of.
Well, there's a company in Santa Monica called Lifespan Medicine, and they do a procedure called Regenikine, and that's what Peyton Manning had done
right.
over in Germany. Kobe Bryant had it done. And this is how I fix my bulging disc in my neck.
Well, when I saw you there in Manchester, yeah. Dana tried to send me to Germany.
Yes, and yeah. I was telling you, you don't have to go to Germany,
yeah,
you go to
right.
Santa Monica.
Yeah,
yeah, they do it's exactly the same procedure.
I didn't go to Germany.
Yeah, don't go to Germany.
I couldn't be bothered.
Oh, well, that's the problem, like, you didn't do anything.
I don't want to go down and spend half an hour or half my day. I don't want to fly to fucking Germany and give yeah. them a week or whatever. So
it's not that much time. It'll
take you
like a couple of hours, you do it three or four times, and they can fix it.
No, I know.
It'll decrease all the joking. Inflammation. The other thing is, there's a thing that they sell at Amazon. You just get it on Amazon.com or a bunch of other stores online, and it's a spinal decompression harness.
I've seen
it. Hanging on a door.
Have you seen the thing where you use you pump it up with your hand?
I've seen that one too. Yeah.
I thought that's what you were talking
about.
No,
that's a good one too. I haven't used that one, but I have friends that have used that one. They like it a lot.
It's not bad. It's not bad.
The one that I use, you hang from a door. It's a little more hardcore.
Right.
It's hooked up to this harness. It clips to the top of the door, and you crank it. Click, 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 and you're like literally hanging. You're hanging there.
Yeah, I was going to say.
In a chair. But it just... Oh, when you get out of there,
oh, really?
Just everything
yeah,
feels good.
I'm going to try and get one of those.
And if you do it consistently, it'll decompress
Oh, really?
It. Yeah,
I need to do that. I need to do that.
Yeah, you can do it in your house. Just get up in the morning, you know, have your cup
My
of tea.
My wife comes in and finds me I've committed suicide one day, dangling from the fucking doorframe. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, well, it won't kill you. It won't kill you.
No.
But it does feel good. And it's the only way that I know of to really stretch your neck out that way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I do need to do that. I try and do it in the sauna.
Was it wrestling that did your neck
Yeah,
as well?
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure, yeah. In fact, I remember it. I was going for a takedown, and I think I ended up headbutting the floor.
Yeah,
at some point.
A lot of it what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
What was that? There was one of the fighters from Alpha Male. He shot in for a takedown, and the guy went for a guillotine, and he spiked himself.
Right.
And then
yeah.
just never
Seen
walked
people
again.
Do that. Oh, never walked.
Never walked again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
poor guy.
Became paralyzed.
No way.
Yeah, because yeah, as he shot, you know, he went in deep on the armpit. The guy went for the guillotine, so his head is trapped and all their weight together.
Sure.
You know, feet up in the air, the whole deal, power double.
Yeah, no, of course, yeah. And then you got two body weights
yep,
going
right
on
your head.
The neck as the... You know, the pressure point, if you will.
Derek Lewis, who has the funniest Instagram of all time, for sure.
Absolutely.
Put one on yesterday of a girl, I think she's dead. She twerked standing on her head, and then she twisted her neck, and then her whole body seized up, stiff as a board.
Well, I'm glad you and Derek find it funny. I'm sure this poor woman's family is...
I hope she's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I really do.
I hope she's okay as well, you know.
But you know, if she's not, there's nothing you do about it now.
Well, no, there isn't, no.
Yeah.
Maybe we won't take the piss out of it on a podcast.
You gotta look at Derek's Instagram on a daily basis, because a lot of the stuff gets taken down.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised he hasn't been banned yet. You know? No,
I just think he's too popular
now. I followed Derek for a while. He's awesome.
He's
hilarious.
He's
so funny.
He's
so,
fucking he hilarious.
Really is. He doesn't give a damn.
No. Nope.
Doesn't
no,
care. See,
all.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, I see things. People send me things, you know, guys from back home. I got some things this morning, you know.
Yeah.
But they're massively offensive.
Right.
You know, and
right,
I have a little right. chuckle in private.
Yes.
You know, I'm not going to put that shit on Instagram. I'm not going to put it for the whole world to see.
What is this? Is he doing a movie or something?
He's doing a movie, I think. But then I think somebody the other day said... when John Jones sneezes on you, I saw somebody put that caption.
Oh, John Jones.
Mm.
He's an interesting character, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
The big comeback. It's going to be a tough fight, man. That's a big fight. That's a big
yeah.
fight. Gustafson is no joke. I love the way they size up, too. The way they
oh,
match
yeah.
up against
Absolutely.
Each other.
Absolutely. See, maybe that's why John struggled a little bit the first time. Because he's not used to fighting somebody with the same frame, the
yeah.
same physical attributes mm-hmm. that make John so great, Alex also has.
Yes.
And what was his last fight? Was it Teixeira? I think it was.
Yes.
He
yes.
looked amazing in that fight.
Sensational. Best
his hands were
looked.
So fast.
Yeah.
So fast. The combinations he put together, mm-hmm. they were beautiful.
And
really, really good.
The final KO was like a video game sequence.
Oh, dude, it was incredible.
Yeah.
It really was.
It really was. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, that was like what we were looking at with Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. Like two guys who'd never fought anybody that size before.
They're no, both, for sure.
both fighting giants, both fighting these really tall guys.
Well, I know you had both guys on the show, and I listened to a little bit of yesterday's with Deontay when I was picking my son up from wrestling. But when I watched that fight, prior to the fight happening, I thought Deontay was going to win, okay? Even though Tyson is a very, very good technical boxer, and for such a big man, uses a lot of feints and a lot of misdirection, and he's very good. I thought Deontay's probably going to catch him. But then when I saw that he weighed in at 212 pounds, I said, oh, it's over. There's no way. 212 pounds, it's too much of a weight disparity. It's insane. But still got that knockout power, man.
Fuck.
Unbelievable.
He said he weighed 209 when he got into the ring.
Yeah, I heard you saying that.
209.
Yeah.
As a fucking heavyweight.
It's insane. Well, that's what I thought. I thought this guy is too light.
Yeah.
He's like a twig. He's 6'7", 209.
Yeah. Crazy.
It's crazy. It really is.
That fucking 12th round KO, or the knockdown, that was insane.
It really was.
He's like Teddy Atlas said it best. He goes, he's like fucking Thor with the hammer.
But, I mean, all respect and credit to Tyson Fury for getting up.
Fuck.
I mean, I know there was all that talk, and Deontay put it on his Instagram about it not actually being 10 seconds, about it being over 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. But still, it is what it is.
It might have been over 10 seconds on the clock, but the referee, it's not the fighter's job to make sure that it's 10 seconds on the clock.
It's not Tyson Fury's job to monitor a stopwatch in the corner and say, exactly. Hey, ref. Yeah. We're at 10. No, if he hasn't said 10 and he gets up, fight's still on, you know?
There's no telling that he couldn't have got up on the actual 10. He probably could have gone up at the actual count of 10 as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But just the way he got up and then managed to win the round.
No, well, that's what really impressed me.
Yeah.
I wasn't the biggest fan of Tyson Fury a few years ago. He I don't know, we had some stupid back and forth on social media, on Twitter. But
what was it about?
He was saying that some Gypsy John, whoever he is, knocked me outside a nightclub in Blackburn. But the only problem with that is that supposedly at the time when I was living in America. So anyway, so it didn't happen. I've never been knocked out outside a nightclub in my life. But apparently, according to Tyson, it did happen. So I wasn't, overly thrilled.
Right.
But I got to say, over the last 6 months or even the year, he really, really won me over. What he overcame, losing all that weight, going through that depression or slump, whatever you want to call it, and then coming back and looking so good. And then afterwards, the post-fight speech I thought was beautiful.
Yeah.
Donating all his money to charity.
All of it.
It's just insane.
He donated $10 million
to
charity.
If you can't respect that, then you've got a serious problem. So I applaud the guy, and I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, I respect the shit out of both of them. And I think that what happened with you was during his cocaine days. So he was coked up and drinking like a fucking fish.
Probably.
So he was probably out of his mind when he said that.
Yeah, exactly. Who cares? Who cares?
He went through a dark time. But, what's fascinating to me is that he pulled himself out of it. Not just pulled himself out, but wants to pull other people out too.
Sure. No, absolutely. And again, donating all that hard-earned money. Hard-earned money. And, you could have just given $1 million.
Yeah, and everybody
would have thought that was amazing as well. That would have been a huge PR stunt. Yeah. But no, he gave it all.
Yeah.
And that speaks volumes about the man. I mean, he even said, I don't need it, you know? He's a gypsy. He doesn't need it. He's probably made enough money to retire already.
Yeah.
He's had some big fights.
And Klitschko fight. Yeah.
Yeah, and the rematch will be even bigger.
Oh, the rematch is going to be gigantic. They're talking about it somewhere April, May, June, somewhere around then.
Yeah.
That's going to be insane.
Yeah.
That's
one of the best boxing fights I've ever seen.
Me as well.
Yeah, it really was incredible.
I felt like it was, it looked like Tyson was outboxing him. And, using a lot of feints, a lot of movement, a lot of misdirection, a lot of that herky-jerky style.
Well, that's what he does. He confuses people.
But then when he got clipped and dropped, I was like, oh.
I thought he was going to get caught with the left hook. Because I was saying, because we were, there was the UFC Adelaide card on at the same time.
Yes.
And we were at the Fox Studios. And when the UFC deal with Fox is up, they switched to Pacific Coast Boxing, of which Deontay Wilder is one of their guys. So in the room where we were watching the Adelaide card, they've got the fucking Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury fight on. Now, I've got to talk about the Adelaide card in detail and break it down and this and that. But there's one of the greatest heavyweight boxing fights you've ever seen in your life going on that screen over there. So I'm like this watching,
like
doing
this. A tennis match?
Yeah, yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. And anyway, but as I was watching it, obviously Deontay was looking for that big right hand, and Fury was doing a very, very good job of rolling away from it, just avoiding that shot. And I said, if he follows that with a left hook, he's going to catch him. And eventually that's what happened.
That was exactly what it was. And he caught him as he was going down, which is even more spectacular.
Because I think he clipped him with the first one.
Yeah, clipped him with the right hand, then caught him with the left hook as he was going down. And the fact that he got up after he was flat on his back, his arms are down, I think 6 out of 10 referees would have stopped that fight right there. Mm. They would have waved it off.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. No, he looked, for a moment, he looked dead.
Yeah.
He looked out.
Yes.
Sorry, pardon me. He didn't look dead. He looked He looked knocked out. He looked unconscious for a few seconds.
Yeah.
And then the lights came back on. I know he came.
It's interesting when a judge or a referee, rather, has a decision to make, whether or not they decide to stop a fight. And it's one of the more frustrating things ever when a referee stops a fight prematurely. It's rough.
Mm.
But then when you look at a fight like the Adonis Stevenson fight this weekend, and I don't remember how to pronounce the Russian gentleman's name. It's with a G-Z.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy who knocked out Adonis.
So I didn't see this, but Adonis is in hospital in critical condition right now, correct?
Yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah. And he's undergone brain surgery. He's got apparently he's got bleeding on the brain, and it was a good knockout, but it wasn't particularly it wasn't insanely vicious.
So when you looked at it, you didn't think
right.
This guy's okay. Going to have issues. Yeah.
No, see, he sat up, he got up, they're like, he looks like he's okay, and it looked like, you know.
But that's the problem with boxing.
Yeah.
You know, I think, what is it, 12 to 15 deaths per year in boxing around the world. It's a very, very sad stat. I guess, you know, I mean, you're involved with the UFC, you know all the pro MMA dialogue that's put out there, you know, well, boxing is more dangerous because it's only punches to the head and they can take more blows, but
that is the thing.
I guess it is true.
It is true.
Yeah, for sure. The slightly bigger gloves, you can take more shots, which has, you know,
that's the argument,
more damaging effect on the brain.
American football versus rugby as well. Rugby is a better, safer sport.
Yeah, which is crazy because there's no pads, no helmets, no nothing.
Right.
But yeah.
But it's a better, safer sport.
I don't know
sport.
If anyone's ever died in rugby. It's not something that I hear about. It's not a narrative.
I'm sure someone's probably
died.
Yeah,
no, for sure. Exactly.
It's a tough sport.
But I don't think it's a thing.
No.
But unfortunately, I mean, the poor guys, you see kids at high school.
Yeah.
There was one on the news, I think, a couple of years ago, close to where I lived down here. And heartbreaking.
Yeah, I would never let my kids play football. My kids wanted to fight. I'd say, look, you're going to learn how to fight correctly. But if you want to play football, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
It's just too many guys running at you full clip, clashing helmet to helmet.
Well, that's the thing, because they're young kids.
Yeah.
They're young kids, and, you know, I remember when I was that age. You think you're invincible. Excuse
yes.
me. Pardon me. You think you're invincible, and certainly then you put on this giant helmet, and you think you can just charge him with your head.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that isn't the case.
Well, we've gone over some of the most recent statistics that they've released on CTE with football players, and they're talking about from Pop Warner to high school to college to professional, the number, like across the board, the number that exhibits CTE symptoms is staggering.
Right.
It's
I can only imagine.
The vast majority.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's a fucking nutty sport, and rugby's better. It's a better sport.
Yeah.
It's a better sport.
What, in terms of?
I think
enjoy
it's more
rugby.
Exciting.
I used to play rugby. I used to love rugby. I was a pretty good rugby player when I was younger. But
it's
surprising to hear that from an American. You know,
I don't watch football.
Half an American, and the big American flag behind you, and you got the fucking. What are those? What is that?
That's from
a
Australia.
Wildebeest?
No, that is an Asian water buffalo from
that
Australia.
That was my next guess.
Yes.
Is it the wildebeest or the Asian water buffalo?
That's from me good mate Adam Greentree, who shot that sucker and brought it over for me.
Nice.
Give me a little decoration.
Yeah.
But that's an invasive species in Australia. They shoot them out of helicopters.
Oh, really?
You know, they have to kill them. They don't have any other than crocodiles.
Well, there's no meat or flesh on it, but if that thing had meat and flesh and bones and was running at me, I'd shit my pants.
Fucking gigantic.
Yeah, look at the
animal.
Size of those horns, man.
And it's a huge animal.
Oh, and I can only imagine.
A couple thousand pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
cows. They're gigantic.
Well, they have cows over there that are wild. They're called scrub bulls.
Right.
But you know how, like, we see a rodeo rider rides a bull, and the bull's like, get the fuck off me.
Yeah, for sure.
Crazy. Well, that's because they've got testosterone and giant balls, and they're fucking super aggressive. You never see a bull in the wild.
Dude, I used to work at a slaughterhouse. I used to slaughter 500 cows a day. Whoa. And the size of those fucking bulls will scare you to death.
Hammer.
I wasn't looking at the cocks.
I know. I'm saying their balls are like a fist.
Oh, dude. Yeah. They're no. When I was 16, I come from a small town, and one of the local employers is the slaughterhouse. And any young loser like myself has done a stint at the slaughterhouse when they need a job, you know. And I went in and I was squeegee mopping blood into the drains. I was like, what the fuck is this?
Oof.
So I said to the foreman, I said, listen, I could be of more use to you than this. He said, let me think about it. So I went off, had my break, had my bacon sandwich, came back, and he's like, yep, you're right. You're a good kid. I'm going to make you an apprentice slaughterman. I was like, holy fuck. That's not what I was looking for. And talk about shocking. Oh, I'd never seen anything like it in my life. It was insane. Insane. And I'm offending all the vegans and animal lovers. I'm an animal lover, big time, you know, but you got to make ends meet when you're a kid living in a small town. Yeah, yeah.
So how'd you slaughter them?
Well, they line up single file, and eventually they come into like a little cubicle like this, and you're standing above them. And as they come in, you push a button, a door drops down, and they're in this confined environment, like a big rectangle, like a big cubicle. And you're raised up, and you have this bell, and you touch the head, and then you knock it on the head, that shoots a bolt. It falls down and falls into the wall. Then you push a button and the door slides up and the cow rolls down. So you run down the steps, and as you're running down, you grab what's called a piffing rod. It's like a 8-foot long flexible piece of plastic. It's in sterilized liquid. You pull that out as you run down. Then you put your, like, knee on belly. You put your knee on the head of the cow. You feel for the hole you just made in the hair. Then you get the end of the piffing rod. You push it into the hole.
Whoa.
You feed it all the way in. Jeez. Until it's all the way into about this much out the top of the head.
How long's a rod?
About 8 foot.
8 foot.
And you feed it all the way, because it goes down the spinal column.
So you're pushing.
You're killing all the nerve endings.
Whoa.
And its eyes are popping out of its head. The thing's fucking kicking like a maniac. You've got your knee on it. You're like, ah! Then you pull that out. Put it back in the sterilized thing. You get a chain, put it around the rear foot, push a button, it strings it up, pull out your knife. Here to here.
Guts.
Elevated doors like The Shining, blood everywhere. Next one, run back upstairs. Next cow, let's go. And if you're not quick, they're like, motherfucker, let's go, come on.
Wow.
500 a day. I was such a pussy. I was such a little bitch.
Day.
I couldn't do it. I'm like, fuck this. Fuck this. I'm going to have nightmares when I go home. I did it for about 2 weeks. And I'm like, yeah, I'm out. See you, buddy.
Too disturbing?
Way too disturbing. and the people that work there are a little disturbed as well, you know.
I would imagine you get a little twisted a couple of years in the job.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were fucking with me because I was a kid.
Right.
You know, like, because obviously from there, then they get, you know, the chainsawed in half and they start looking like meat.
Right.
You know, and they go up and they take a bite. Yeah, take a bite, Mike. It's an acquired taste, you know. And
they would eat it raw?
They were just doing it to fuck with me.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Little 16-year-old kid, wet behind the ears. But,
I didn't know that they stuck a rod through the hole in the brain all the way through the spinal column.
Man. Yeah,
that's crazy.
It's pretty shocking, yeah.
I've never even heard of something like that.
Yeah, piffing rod, that's what you call it.
Wow. I wonder if that's standard practice still today. Because I've seen some awful PETA slaughterhouse videos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
they die quick, though.
It was weird.
Like they die instantly.
It's very, very quick, yeah. They get through enough in one day. I couldn't do it now. There's no way I could do it now. When you're young, you know, your morals change as you get older, your feelings or your values change. Couldn't do it now.
What if that was your only source of meat?
Well, if it was my only source of meat, then the motherfucker's dying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm not I know you're a big hunting guy. I've never been hunted in my life, but if you're going to eat it to live, then good for you, of course. You know, it serves a purpose.
Yeah. Well, I became a hunter because of those videos.
Which videos?
Those PETA videos of slaughterhouses.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Like, I don't want to have any part of that.
No, no. Well, exactly. No. I respect that. I do. I'm not so much into their, well, I detest it, trophy hunting and things like that. You know, I know that's a...
Yeah, no, I'm not into it either. I mean, I don't understand the desire to hunt something that you're not interested in eating.
I mean, these rich businessmen flying out to Africa and, you know, shooting... Elephants. A majestic beast or an elephant or a lion from a distance. There's no honor in that.
There's no honor in shooting a lion even from close up.
From a distance, hiding in the bushes and pulling a fucking trigger, you think that makes you a man? You think that, you know?
The only way that makes sense to me is if you're in a part of Africa where lions are consistently killing your livestock and you have to protect your livestock, which is Colorado. There's a big issue with mountain lions and a lot of it, Wyoming. There's a lot of places that have hunting seasons on mountain lions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't say there's hard and fast rules for everything. Right, different environments, different situations, then you need, you know, a different approach, you know.
Well, you know that Cecil the Lion thing, that whole story that went down and, you know,
happened? If you remind me, I think I know about it. I remember hearing something about it.
A famous, majestic lion that was in this park, and the lion left the park and went into this area where it's legal for them to hunt, and a hunter who's a dentist from America shot this lion, and everyone became very mad at this guy because the lion had a collar on it, which meant that it was a lion that they were tracking. But the thing is that they can't see the collar when they're trying to shoot it. They have this giant mane. There's no way you're going to see
where
the
was
collar.
This dentist from
somewhere in America.
Yeah, so he's a fucking asshole.
Yeah,
so what? It was in my territory where I'm allowed to shoot.
Yeah.
All right, gray area, I guess. But the fact that you're flying out to fucking Africa to shoot majestic beasts, for me, that's a weak excuse.
It is.
And this is coming from a guy that used to fucking kill 500 cows a day.
Here's where it's fucked up,
for a
though.
Week, and I was an apprentice. I didn't really do it very often.
When the backlash hit and all these people were furious at that guy, and then no one wanted to go over there and hunt lions. So because no one wanted to go over there and hunt lions, the lion population exploded. When the lion population exploded, the ungulate population, all the, you know, antelope and all those dropped radically.
Sure.
So the wildlife biologists made an assessment that they had to kill some lions. Yeah. So they killed... I think they wound up killing 200 lions and just dumping their bodies. Whereas for the money would have gone for those 200 lions, they would have gotten $50,000 for each lion if a hunter had taken them. And then what they have done, they take that money, they pour it back into conservation. It's a very messy business.
Sure, absolutely. You know, and there you go. There is the argument for it.
Yeah, but it's a tricky argument.
Which it is a tricky argument. And I don't have the answers. Yeah. And I'm not educated enough to really sit here and debate it or really cast any kind of opinion on anyone, really. I just, shooting an animal from a distance, I'm not a fan of. That's about it.
You shoot most of them from a distance. You kind of have to.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Like if I shoot an elk up close, that's a real problem.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. You're going to shoot for first. And I'm not talking about you going out and I've seen your videos on your barbecue. It looks fucking delicious. I'm sure it's great. I'm sure it's awesome. I have no issue with that.
I'll cook you some.
Please. I would love to.
You'll eat it and you'll go, holy shit.
I'm sure I will.
It doesn't taste like anything else, man.
I love meat.
I'm a carnivore.
I'm a carnivore, for sure.
No, you're right. Look, the argument for it, you can make the same argument for people. Hey, we'll keep these people healthy. We'll just kill a couple of them.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Exactly.
How about we have these really rich people come over from Germany. They spend $100,000 and they'll kill a few poor people. And that the rest of the poor people, they're going to get all this money. There'll be more houses for them all.
Right now, there isn't enough accommodation for everybody to live in. Let's just cull.
We'll just have a few hundred thousand. Let them loose in the hills. And we'll chase them with bows and arrows.
We'll just kill a few of these people.
It's tricky.
You know?
It's not good. We'll
kill some of the rapists and murderers coming over the border. Yeah. Job solved.
And then the other problem is even the animals that make sense.
I don't think there's rapists and murderers coming off the border.
Well, there's probably a couple. Yeah. Let's be honest. I think there's a couple.
Yeah.
Most of them are just poor folks and want a better life.
No, for sure. And no shame on that.
Well, you're an immigrant. My family's immigrants. Absolutely. I mean, we're all product of immigrants. This whole 100%.
Yeah, of course.
Unless you're Native American, you should probably shut the fuck up.
100%.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, no, that's
especially
totally
here.
Right. Yeah. No, I know. That's the funny thing. I'm like, really?
Here.
Fucking show me a third generation American in this country. They're hard to come across.
They are.
You know? Yeah. Everybody I meet out here claims to be English. when I meet them. Oh, yeah, my fucking auntie's English or Irish, or they all claim to be Irish. You guys love to claim an Irish descent.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Is this recent? Is this because of Conor McGregor?
You guys fucking love to claim Irish. My mum's Irish. My mum has an Irish accent, okay? Mm. She fucking talks like this, Michael, right, Joe?
Hey.
Right? She's Irish as they come.
Hi.
I have never once claimed to be Irish.
There you go.
That's what I say to everybody. They're like, oh, yeah, I'm Swiss. I'm Italian. I'm this. Does anybody in your immediate family talk with an Italian accent? No? Well, shut the fuck up, because you're American, okay? And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. Be it's proud okay. of that.
Yeah.
You're not English. Just because your great-great-great-great-grandmother grew up in Ipswich or Gloucestershire or somewhere doesn't make you English, love.
So your kids,
and that's okay.
kids, your kids' kids will be American.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. We got green cards recently, so yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, they will be, yeah.
How does that work? You have to mind your P's and Q's? If you get in trouble over here, they ship you back?
I guess.
That's tricky, right? That's one good thing about
being
American.
Well, I'm okay. You know, 20 years ago, it would have been an issue.
Right.
But these days, I'm
You're
fine.
A gentleman.
I'm a gentleman. I'm a refined gentleman, Joe. Come on, man.
You're a businessman. You're
gainfully
employed.
Killing
You're
it. Killing it.
Commentator. Oh. You got a podcast. You're doing movies.
It's all over the place.
A lot of shit's happening.
Yeah, we're good. We
don't have to worry about
you. We're not hanging out in bars getting knocked out by gypsies. They were the old days.
You are getting into the movie business, right? You've been doing a few movies. Weren't you doing a movie during the time you were doing the Rockhold fight?
That's right. Yeah, I was filming Triple X. I've been out there for about 3 months. And then I was flying home and I was looking for some walkie-talkies for my seven-year-old. I don't know why. I thought that'd be a good idea. Turns out getting hold of walkie-talkies isn't very easy these days. I went on a fucking wild goose chase trying to get these fucking walkie-talkies that didn't even get played with. It was like, yeah, cool, I've got a phone, Dad. I'm like, yeah, I should have thought of that. But and as I'm looking for them, I check Twitter, I got a coffee, and I see Chris Wyman and pulled out. So yeah, I text Dana, I said, listen, if this is true, you know where I am. And he was like, oh great, we love that, you know, blah, 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 blah. But Jacare is our first option. So I thought, for a minute there, I thought I was getting a title shot, and I thought, there's no way Jacare is going to turn it down. So I went to my buddy's Jason's house and watched a basketball game and had a few drinks and, you know, didn't party as such. I was on set the next day, but I had a few drinks. Now, if I knew I was fighting for a world belt in 2 weeks, you know, I would have been on a strict diet, not overindulging, but I definitely overindulged. And then the next day, I'm walking into the gym, just have, you know, just a light workout, and my phone starts exploding, lighting up like a Christmas tree. And I'm like, what the hell? And then Ariel Helwani calls me. He's like, Mike, Dana just announced on SportsCenter that you're fighting for the belt. I'm like, what? What the fuck? This is the first I heard about it. I'm like, fucking Dana.
That is ridiculous.
God bless him. So I'm like, oh shit. So I'm panicking like crazy.
How much did you weigh?
So that's the first thing I did. I ran into the changing room, got on the scale. I was like 215, 216.
Is that rough?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I like to
what
be.
What do you like?
A week before, I like to be 200 pounds. So this is 2 weeks before. I'm 215, so I'm like, shit, screw the weights, I need to run.
Right.
So I just run out of the gym, throw my backpack on my shoulders, and just I'm sprinting through Toronto City Centre like a madman. Of course, there's traffic lights every 30 seconds,
right.
So I don't want to stop at the traffic lights because that's no good. So I'm just running out, nearly getting run over by taxis, and jumping over homeless people, falling over, ducking and diving. It was great training. And then Dana called, so I'm negotiating, you know, the fight whilst running through Toronto. And then carried on going, and then I end up like in the middle of nowhere, just running and running and running. And then Jason Perillo gets on the phone, and you know, all the doubt starts creeping in. I start thinking, Jesus Christ, this is so typical of my career. I've won a title fight my whole career, you know, been through many ups and downs, and now here I am. I get the title fight. It's on 2 weeks' notice. I've been filming a goddamn movie. I've been near a gym, MMA gym, for a while doing anything. And it's against somebody that's already beaten me. So I'm kind of destined to fail. This is so fucking typical. And then Jason got on the phone and, you know, he talked me around big time. You know, said a lot of very positive things. Jason's an amazing coach.
Absolutely. He really is.
He's incredible. He really is. There's a lot of trainers out there. There's a lot of pad men. You know, there's a lot of fakers in mixed martial arts, certainly these days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, guys that really have true heritage in martial arts or any kind of steep history in combat sports, they're few and far between.
Yeah.
You know, you can train, any guy can watch a video And it's a little bit of coordination, how to hold pads. And you see them. It's the all the craze, isn't it, these days? Hitting pads to get fit, you know. One, two, left, up, woo. You know, just because you can do that and hold pads doesn't make you a coach.
Right.
Does not make you a coach. And there's a lot of fakers out there, but Jason is not one of them. He speaks from the heart and he knows what the fuck he's talking about. And we had a good chat. And by the end of it, I was feeling a lot better. And yeah.
So when you were filming that movie, were you working out at all?
I was doing vanity workouts. I like to run, certainly when I'm in a city. So I was running probably 3 or 4 days a week, a 4.2-mile run.
Not too bad. Yeah, so
I was running and I was lifting weights a few times a week, you know, biceps and shoulders.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, chest press, lots of chest press, you know what right. I mean? And then GSP's coach, Jorge Blanco. Do you know Jorge?
No, I don't.
He's very, very, very good trainer. Rashad Evans put me onto him whilst I was up there. I went to see him like, 2 or 3 times, you know. But no, not training as such. But yeah,
just all worked out. Just a little bit of exercise. But sometimes that's good anyway, right? So it gives your body a chance to recover.
Well, that's what I said afterwards. Because I went into that fight feeling so strong, feeling so good. I'm like, psh. Because I consistently overtrained every single fight in my career, apart from that one. And I said, I'll learn from this. I'll learn from this. And you don't. And it's like Jason Prillo always says, it takes confidence to take a day off, to rest the body, you know?
Yeah.
And now, of course, there's a fine line between having the confidence to take a day off and being a lazy bastard and saying, I'm going to sit on the couch today.
Right.
You know, but if you know, listen, I'm good. I'm going to take a day or two off because I need it, you know? So that was one of the mistakes I made with my career. I always trained too much. And Jason said, you know, I used to mind fuck myself because it meant so much to me, you know? My fight career meant so much to me. I used to overcomplicate it, overanalyze it, overwork it, stress myself out with it, you know? And that was hindering my performances. You know, I never once fought to my ability of what I performed in the gym. Never once. I remember one day I pulled up outside Ruka and Jason was waiting for me outside. And I pulled up and he says, Mike, come here. Can we have a quick chat? I said, yeah, what's up? He said, listen, a bunch of good guys in there, okay? He said, but you're a fucking world champion. Can you go in there and spar these guys and act like a world champion? They're here, you're up there. Act like it. Don't go in, lose your fucking temper, spaz out, stress out, act like a dick, say things you regret. You know, when the sparring's not quite necessarily going your way, you get a little pissed off or whatever, you know, say your jiu-jitsu coach is catching you and tapping you out a little bit and you start getting a little frustrated. He said, can you just, you know, can we have none of that, please? And great advice. Just like when I was fighting for the belt, when I flew home from doing that movie, I went straight to the gym when I landed, and Jason said to me, because I was always stressed, you know, and he said, listen, we don't know if you're going to win this fight, Mike. You know, fingers crossed, I believe in you, I believe you're going to win this fight, but we don't know if you're going to win this fight. So this might be the only time you're ever going to fight for a world title. Right? I said, well, yeah, possibly. He said, well, let's enjoy the process. You know, let's go through this with a smile on your face. He said, this is huge. He said, you're in a position that everyone would kill to be in. You're fighting for the championship. You're fighting for the belt. You've wanted this your whole life. Enjoy this, you know? And it was such amazing advice because I was like, yeah, you're right. And I went through the whole thing with a big smile on my face. And
when you clip Rockhold, I remember thinking, holy shit. When I see Rockhold's legs buckle and I see him stagger backwards, I was like, holy shit, he got him. And then when he stumbled against the cage and you bashed him and stopped him.
I can't help but laugh because, you know, it does bring a smile to my face.
I almost couldn't believe it. It was like a movie. It was one of those things because you were a big underdog coming to that fight. Everybody knew you took it on short notice.
Yep.
Everybody knew that you were working on a movie. And so for you to land that, when you landed that left hand, you missed it once before too. And I remember thinking, like, man, that is fucking close.
Mm.
Like, that's close. Like, you saw this opening for that left hand. And you clipped him over the top of the shoulder. He didn't see it coming. Bang! You dropped that left hand on his chin. And you see, like, his eyes roll back and his legs give out.
Yeah.
Fuck, man.
Well, that was the whole plan, the left hook. You know, Jason had seen that he was open for that. And I'd seen he was open for that. And he was even doing this exercise on these bands and like resistance bands, whatever. Mm-hmm. He was doing this and his chin was up and his right hand was down at the end of it. And Jason said, he's drilling these moves here and he's finishing here, that left hook, all day long. And, you know, he's coming forward and we're exchanging punches and nothing really significant has landed. And I just, right hook to the body, whoosh, just whip the left hook. And you know, as a fighter, when you land a good shot, because you get the feedback on your fist. Yeah. There's nothing like it, you know what I mean? When you feel that solid connection and the knuckles go through the glove, you know, and you mm-hmm. feel it, you're like, oh, that was a good one. And then, boom, he falls down. I'm like, holy shit, hold on. And then he gets back up. I'm like, fuck you, boom, back yeah. down. And then he went down and obviously he's got very good jiu-jitsu and he was kind of sat back against the fence and I thought, I've got to be careful not to go in his guard, but... yeah, I got the finish. Felt the best feeling I've ever felt in my life was Big John McCarthy's gigantic forearm nearly pulling my head off my shoulders as he wrestled me off him.
Because he knew it was over.
Because I knew it was over. It was great.
What did that feel like when you knew you did it?
It one of the best feelings in the world. One of the best. Because, you know, for me, you know, the amount of fights I've had is unbelievable. Professionally and unprofessionally, you know. When I was a kid, that's all... I was, you know, that was my only identity as being a fighter, you know, and just being that guy, you know, unfortunately, rightly or wrongly. Well, it's wrongly, you know, of course it is. You know, I was a fucking idiot when I was a kid. I was fighting so much, but that's what I clung to, you know. I was a fighter and that was the only thing that I could draw pride from, you know, and becoming the world champion, knowing that everybody wrote me off, knowing that everyone talked shit about me, you know, other fighters, just, you know, it was everywhere. I heard what people always said about me, do you know what I mean? So to win like that in style in the first round, yeah, yeah, it felt amazing.
There it is right there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Rockhold was very upset.
Yeah, he was, yeah. You know,
you talked a lot of shit to him even after you beat him.
Well, hold on. And my wife was behind me there, and she deserves a shout out because if it wasn't for her, none of this would have happened. But with Rockhold, with what happened after the fight, there's a few things that I regret that happened after the fight. First of all, I jump on the fence, and I'm just so worked up. I scoot now. Fuck you. Whatever. No big deal. I'm not too concerned about that one. And then as I'm doing my like victory dance, if you will, I do a lap of the octagon. And I cross paths with Luke, pardon me. And I'm like, hey, you know, you say whatever yeah. you say, you know, unlucky bird, you know, good fight, whatever, blah, 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 blah. I said that and I carried on having my moment. I was just out of my mind on adrenaline and just having a great time. And then I found myself, I'd done an entire lap of the octagon again and I was passing him again. So I just thought I'd extend my courtesy one more time. I'm like, yeah, you know, and I put my hand out and he said, I already shook your hand. I'm like, oh, really? You're still going to be a dickhead? He's like, yeah, I already shook your hand. So then I was like, okay, well, now the gloves are off. I said, don't worry, buddy. You're in an octagon. You've just been knocked out. It's okay. You'll figure it out in a minute. Don't worry about it. You'll come too, bud. You'll be good. So I kind of looked like an asshole because people didn't see that. He refused to shake my hand the second right. time. You know, I was like, well, go fuck yourself then. And then when you gave me the microphone, I said the most crude comment ever. I'm like, I've been fighting ever since I came out of my mother. I'm like, whoa, that is not an image that I want to portray to the world when I win the world belt. You know, what right. I meant was ever since I've been born.
Right.
You know, but in the moment, right. you know, the words escaped me a little bit and I painted a rather disturbing image of my mother giving birth to me. But I didn't choose my words too carefully there. But it was great, man.
Well, you can't be held accountable for that. I mean, there's no one that's ever going to be able to understand that other than someone who wins the title.
Yeah,
nice. No one's going to know what that felt like. It's impossible.
It was incredible. It really was. It really was. Yeah.
I can only imagine.
It was a good one. It was good.
I'm just happy that for you, you know, having a chance to see all your fights and see your career go for as long as it went, that you did go out with a title. That is a nice
thing. Yeah, for sure.
Thing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, as I say, that was for me. I'm not sure. Well, I wouldn't have retired yet.
Really?
You know? Yeah, no, because I know I could still do it. I could still fight now. You know, I can still. But the time was right. You know, and then I started having issues with my good eye as well after the Gastelum fight. So I'm like, you know, this isn't worth it.
How is your eyes now? Because you had oil in one of your eyes protecting. Yeah. Can you explain how that was going on?
Yeah, so when I detached my retina, they did what's called a scleral buckle. And if you've watched the surgery, it's absolutely disgusting. But one of the things that they do, they put gas inside your eye. And I think it... If I'm getting this wrong, I apologize to all doctors, but they kind of helps hold the retina in place. But you can't fly with that. And I was filming a movie in England a few weeks later. I said, you can't do that. I said, I'm filming a movie. And they went, okay, there's another way we can do it. It's a little more unconventional. We can put oil inside there, but then with that you can fly. So I'm like, okay, cool, do that. So they did that. And yeah, you know, it's... And then it re-detached, and then I got glaucoma. I just had a lot of bad luck. I did.
Jesus.
Whatever can go wrong with an eye, trust me, I went through it.
But it looks different now.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
But it looks better than it looked before.
It looks great.
Yeah. What did you do?
Looks great. Don't worry about it, Joe.
Oh, you don't want to talk about it? Okay.
No, you're good. It's okay. It's a corrective lens.
Oh, okay.
It's a corrective lens. It's a prosthetic.
So can you see well out of that eye?
I see a tiny bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I don't really see out of it. And the vision's very blurred. I mean, I was able to pass the tests. To be able to clear by a commission to fight, you got to have 2200 vision, which I was able to scrape by with the skin of my teeth.
Wow.
You know, so, and my doctor was always amazed that I could still see to that amount. If I squinted in the right direction and I turned here and the light was just right, I could just about make out 2200.
Wow.
So, but what happens is then, because you're seeing two different images, distorted images, so your brain cancels the distorted one, you know, so...
But the depth perception remains the same?
No, depth perception's a real issue. Yeah, you know, it was an issue throughout my last few fights. For me, the main thing, I mean, as I say, you know, I was cleared medically by the doctors, and, you know, the UFC were very, very on top of all of that. The UFC, you know, sent me to a number of different doctors and whatnot, and as I say... I passed the test just, but it was, and every time I did, the doctors were like, we don't recommend that you fight, you know.
Of course.
2200 vision, it's still clinically blind.
Really?
Yeah. So, but there you go.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, but it never slowed me down.
It didn't slow you down. That's what's crazy. A lot of guys would have retired.
Looking back now, not that I sit there at night and get drunk and watch my old fights. I've never done that once. But if I ever do see some old fights back, which occasion just happens by chance, you know, afterwards, I'm always calling for a shot at the belt or whatever. I said to my wife, I said, what the fuck was this guy thinking? Do you know what I mean? He's out of his mind, you know, absolutely out of his mind. But at that time, it quitting and trying to not become the champion did not even occur to me for a split second. Giving up never even... occurred to me for a heartbeat.
Why is that? Is this how you've always been? Is this something you cultivated?
I still felt that I could win it. Simple right. as that, you know.
But a lot of guys, if they had lost most of the use of one of their eyes, would have been done.
There yeah,
been
for like, sure.
No chance. This is not worth it.
Yeah. No, I know. And probably the smart thing to do would have been one of those guys. But for me, you know, it meant a lot to me. I wanted to become the champion. I knew I could become the champion, contrary to popular belief. And this is me. It was my identity. And until I won that belt, I wasn't happy. Now, when I won it, my wife said she wanted me to retire. When I fought Luke in LA, she said, if you win, I want you to retire. I said, babe, if I lose, then I'll retire. Okay? Because fair enough, I got my title shot. You know, it didn't go my way. It is what it is. I would have had closure on that. I said, but if I win, you're out of your fucking mind if you think I'm going to retire. He said, come on, I'm the champion of the world. I've got to milk it for a little bit. Finally earn some decent paydays, you know. So, it all worked out.
Well, the big fight with GSP.
I mean, oh, yeah.
That's why that took place, because you had that belt.
Yeah, you know, I mean, George beat me fair and square that night, but there was a lot going on going into that camp. That the final week, And again, I never said anything at the time because God bless George, and he's a great guy, and I respect the hell out of George. I really do. How can you not? You know, I mean, I know I talked all that shit leading into the fight, but that was just me having a laugh. You know, I was literally having fun with it. You know, no ill will towards George.
It seemed like you were enjoying it.
Yeah, I was just having fun, just busting balls. You know what I mean? I think George is incredible. I think George is the consummate professional. He's an inspiration to all aspiring martial artists out there. If there's one man you can model your career on, the way he trains, the way he looks after his body, the way he cross trains, George St. Pierre would be that man. You know, he's an inspiration to myself, you know. So nothing but the greatest of respect. But people, as we said at the start of the show, that doesn't sell. People don't want to see that. People don't want to see that. Right. So I'll play the bad guy. I've been portrayed as a bad guy my entire career, you know, by the UFC, the editing. You know, I've fallen foul to some creative editing. I've fallen foul to my own mouth as well at times. Yes. So, you know, come on. You know, I'm my own worst enemy as well. But
the week before the fight.
Yeah, week before the fight, I had the best training camp of my life. You know, sounds braggy, but knocking out multiple sparring partners, not on purpose. It just, I felt incredible. Felt absolutely incredible. Final sparring session, we had My Protein. They'd flown in for a photo shoot. There was someone else there for a photo shoot. The gym's absolutely packed, and we got some guys in there sparring me. And, you know, everybody wants to be the guy, you know, that gets the takedown or whatever, or gets the submission on the guy. That's, you know, that's how it is. Yeah. That's why I don't like going to too many MMA gyms when I was fighting, because every time you walk in, you have a target on your back. Anyway, it was the final round. We'd done five rounds. It was the Friday before the fight. And this guy shooting a double leg, runs me all the way across the octagon like his life depended on it, picked me up, slammed me down, and his shoulder just went right into my ribs, and I felt it instantly. Just all the cartilage just tore completely, and I just started swearing and screaming out, fucking, you know, because I knew. Mm-hmm. I went, saw a doctor and whatnot, and yeah, it wasn't good, so I got treatment every day, and I was having ice on me and all that type of stuff. but it wasn't working. So what we came up with this plan. I was going to inject myself with lidocaine before the fight because it will numb you. But the problem is the area where it was you can pierce a lung. Where I have to go in, you could pierce a lung and bleed to death, cause internal bleeding. Christ. Yeah, so I got this doctor, and I had the needle, I had the lidocaine, and I was gonna fucking go in and sneak into the toilet and FaceTime the doctor, and he was like, okay. And anyway, the whole thing, it was just too on top. It was bullshit. I was like, fuck this. This is the stupidest plan ever. Bollocks to it. I'll fight with a sore rib, a bit of adrenaline, and you're not gonna feel it anyway, which I didn't on the night, you know. But people said, oh, you didn't look yourself in there. You weren't moving too much. I said, yeah, no shit. I couldn't move. But as I said, hey, all credit to George. God bless him. He did great.
Was this a sparring partner that you had sparred with regularly?
No, he came. Dean Amasinga, great guy. Just came in from England for the last couple of weeks.
So it was Dean who took you down?
Yeah, yeah.
I know Dean very well.
Yeah, you know Dean, yeah. Yeah, fucking Dean the prick.
I love that dude. Dean, yeah. What the fuck, dude?
Yeah, no, he's a great guy. Dean's awesome.
He's great.
Yeah, he's great. You know, it's the way it goes. You're training and, what are you going to do?
Fuck. So many fights. I mean, that was Rafael Dos Anjos when he was supposed to fight McGregor. Like last round, last sparring, kicks an elbow and breaks his foot.
Oh, so that's why Diaz came in.
Yeah.
Ah. Yeah, yeah.
This happened to so many guys.
It's such a fine line. Because you feel good. You've trained so hard. You feel great. And you think, oh. Like, your coach will say, okay, let's call it there, guys. We're good. Call it there. And you're like, I don't know. I feel good. Come on, let's get one good one in. Because sometimes I normally train spar Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And if the Wednesday spar goes really well, you're like, let's end it there. Because you want to end on a really good spar. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because you feel like a world champion. You feel great. You know, you remember how you handled all your sparring partners and whatever good shots you landed, and you didn't really take any damage. That's great momentum to go into the fight with. And you don't know if you have another sparring session, it's going to go like that.
Right.
You know, you might be tired, you might be worn down. Those guys might be on their game that day. And if you get a tough sparring session, well, then you want to do one more, because you can't go into a fight after getting your ass kicked in a sparring session.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's not good karma or energy to go in there with. So it's always a weird one. It's a fine balancing act, but yeah, there you go.
Do you, when you look back on your career, would you have done anything differently in terms of the way you prepared?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. A lot of things, yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean.
Like, if you had a time machine.
Yeah.
And you'd shoot yourself back to
if I could do it all over again, yeah. I'd do way more things.
What would you do?
Well, one, I wouldn't balloon up in between fights. Discipline between fights. You know, I didn't exercise enough of that in between fights. Yeah, a little too much, you know. These days, I look after my body way more now than when I was fighting. It's so fucking hypocritical, you know. It's so silly. Now because now I don't have the luxury of going through a fight camp to get in shape.
Right.
You know what I mean? So now I've got to stay in shape, simple as that. Whereas in the past, I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'll have a pizza. I'll have a few beers. I'll have a dessert. I'll eat whatever I want. Right. And then when I'm in training camp, switch it on. But it's not good for the body. So that would be one. Yeah, many things. You know, I don't really want to throw anyone under the bus or whatever. But yeah.
Right, so training-wise,
There's things I would have changed, you know. There was a group of people that I was involved with in England for a while. Definitely wouldn't have wasted my time with those fucking assholes.
Did you get clear of all that legally?
No, not yet. Still going on. This Friday, there's another hearing in the courts, yeah.
Lots of lies.
But
this has been going on for, what, eight years?
Yeah, something like that. Yes, it's 2011. So
I remember you telling me about this when we were in England together.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a long time ago, man.
It was a very long time ago. Yeah, what are you going to do? Yeah. There's a lot of scumbags out there, people that want to take your money. So
it's hard for young fighters, too, when they get contractually obligated to someone that doesn't suit them later in their career, but then they start becoming successful, and they're still contractually obligated to those people
for
that they started out with. It's a very common issue with fighters.
Yeah, well, for me, I wasn't contractually obligated. I kept my mouth shut. I did my 5 years and moved on, but they saw it a different way. So they came out with some totally fabricated nonsense about camp bills going back to 2006. They just created invoices and just totally fabricated an entire case. Not a single email, not a single signature, nothing. It's laughable that it even got this far, but if you've got brass balls on you and you're willing to stick to a story and talk a lot of shit and lie, you can go a long way. Oof. It seems, but I don't want to talk about that too much because I'll probably end up getting fucking sued again.
You thought about training fighters?
I would love to.
Yeah?
I really would love to because I feel this was one of my issues as I was a coach. Sorry, pardon me. As a fighter because, believe it or not, you know, I mean, I retired at 39 years old. And at the time, I'd had the most fights in the UFC and, you know, and whatever. Believe it or not, I know a thing or two about how to prepare for a mixed martial arts fight. You know, so that was one of my conflicting things always with my coaches. Not that I didn't respect them, but I would always kind of feel maybe I should be doing this or should be doing that. And that's what I would do a lot of the time. I was like kind of like the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jason Priller was probably the head coach, but I would like be the one that did the program and need to work on this. I'll see that guy on that day.
Right.
You know. So, yeah, I would love to. I would love to. Right now, I've got a lot of things going on and life is good. So I don't really have the time to dedicate myself to it.
Right.
And actually, I'm kind of enjoying just, well, I'm still working for the UFC doing the fight coverage stuff, but it's enjoyable to be doing something different. You know, after being submerged in it, totally submerged for so long, it's refreshing to be doing something else, you know?
Yeah.
So, but one day I would love to, for sure.
Well, you're seeing it with fighters. There's some of them that are making those transitions into training, and who better to know what it's like to prepare for a fight than someone like yourself who had so many fights in the UFC? I mean, if it's almost like that knowledge and experience is almost wasted, or at least goes the experience of how to prepare kind of goes away if you don't pass it on, because otherwise someone has to go through all the stuff you've been through to learn.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. And that's partly why I do want to do that. When the time comes, as I say, it wouldn't be fair to anybody right now because I haven't got the time to commit.
Right.
You know, I'm working on some things and hopefully they all come off and I've got some free time and I can sit on my ass. You know, everyone's always like, oh, congrats on the retirement. I'm like, fucking retirement? I'm working harder than ever these days, you know. Maybe I need to come out of retirement to get some free time back, you know. But when the time comes, I would love to do that.
That is the best case scenario, though, your situation, because you've retired into a very profitable career, whereas there's a lot of fighters, they're lost when it's over. They don't know what to do.
Always scared me.
Yeah.
Always scared me.
Good for you. Good for you for thinking like that.
It terrified me right from day one. So I left school at 16, you know, no education, like a fucking idiot. That's one of my big regrets in life. Small town boy, you know, northwest of England, not a lot going on there. Beautiful little town, but, you know, tiny little town. Not a lot of opportunity, and just fell into a rut, you know, working minimum wage in factories, you know, from 7 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night, just doing mundane, menial shit, you know, and I hated it. I hated it. I really did. And that's why I became a fighter, ultimately. And it was a very well-planned decision. You know, the whole story to me coming to do this was it didn't happen overnight. You know, there was steps to it.
What was your first discipline?
I started doing Japanese jiu-jitsu when I was 8 years old, and I was obsessed with it.
So that's how you knew how to clear the sword.
Yeah. I was obsessed with Japanese jiu-jitsu when I was a kid. It's great. Yeah, I was doing. See, we didn't know it was MMA back then, but we were fighting MMA. We called it knockdown sport budo. If you Google it, you can bring it up. You can bring up some of my fights.
Knockdown sport budo.
Yeah, which is MMA, bare knuckle, and we have like these international tournaments against, you know, men. I was about 15, something like that at the time. But yeah, so we do tons of that stuff. When I was younger, you know, I was, as I say, obsessed with martial arts and pretty much won every single tournament I ever went in. And then on top of that, I was a little shit out and about as well, so I was having plenty of fight experience. And then, as I say, just dead-end job after dead-end job after dead-end job. And I got to a phase in my life, I met my wife, Rebecca, and we had kids. I was like, is this it? Is this all that life is going to be? You know? And then my boss at work at the time, Mick, he said to me, "Mate, you're a pretty intelligent guy. Is this what you want to do for the rest of your life?" And I'm like, fuck no. He's like, "Well, oh, here we go. Here's one of them."
This is wild.
Yeah.
This is like me. Some Fight Club shit. I mean, even the seedy, dark-looking background, the weird lighting. This is like a scene in a movie.
Came out through fire. He walked through fire when he was walking.
You walked through fire to get here? Oh, Jesus, you did walk through fire. Actual fire. Oh, it looks like smoke and lights.
Yeah. There's another one, actually, which is true to my...
scoot ahead on this. This is wild, the way you guys are dressed and everything.
Yeah.
I, to this day... think that fights should be held in this sort of a scenario where there's a large open air place like a basketball court.
Yeah.
I just feel like the cage is such a factor in fights.
No, it really is. It really is. And it allows, I mean, you can use there's one more on there if you can find it, Jamie, which is pretty funny. Joel got a good laugh at, and so will everybody else, because I guess the early Michael Bisping was on display. We bow at each other and I kick him in the face.
Oh, really?
Right off the bat. But, you know, the referee had said fight. The cage, you can use it as a, you know, it's another weapon. You can stall on it. You can lean on it. You use it to stand up.
It's a factor.
It's a huge factor in the UFC or
and
in a necessary martial
one.
Arts.
And it's hard to see sometimes. If you're in the crowd and you got a post there,
oh, no,
and these
for sure.
guys are brawling, you wind up looking at the screens.
Yeah, no, absolutely you do.
Yeah.
You know, I was having me and Lewis on one of our episodes recently, he was saying, you know, usually when I'm front row at the fight, I'm like, hold on a minute. When have you ever been front row at the fight for one? Because he was saying, I prefer the first riser. I'm like, okay, well, that's what everyone says, that they can't get front row tickets, okay? You all say, oh, I'd rather be on the first riser, you know, because you haven't got to get a sore neck looking up. I said, well, guess what? When you're front row, it's fucking cool, okay? You can hear the punches. You can see the blood and the sweat.
If the first riser was good, I'd be doing commentary from
if
there.
If the first riser was great, that's where all the celebrities were. Watch this.
Look at this.
Fight, boom.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That was fine, in my opinion. He said fight.
What is he wearing? He's wearing wrestling shoes?
Yeah.
Wow.
The old head scissors, classic.
There's a video on Flow Grappling from a recent jiu-jitsu tournament where a guy got a guy in a head scissors to put him to sleep.
Right
from his guard.
Yeah, well, I won a couple of like shitty grappling tournaments. What,
with the head scissors?
Yeah.
It fucking works, man.
Yeah, if
head
you can
scissors,
squeeze hard enough. Yeah. It wasn't against the best competition, though. The guy might have been 55 or
it's
something.
It's still legit, though.
Yeah, if you get the knees on the right part of the neck and squeeze like a bitch, it hurts.
And especially if you practice it. I feel like the head scissors is something like, look, yeah. Think about when you're cinching a darse, right? Or when you go under for a darse and you clamp a hold of your hands and you pinch down. Some guys are expert at that,
oh,
right?
Absolutely.
They develop
that
six squeeze, uh-huh. That six clamp down. If you just constantly drill that all the time, you could fuck people up with that. Just get better at it. Like,
well, you could.
Right?
But yeah. I don't want to be the guy going for a head scissors in the UFC and everyone's like, fucking Bisping with his British wrestling. Look at him doing a head scissors. It's like the women going for the head and arm. You know, in women's MMA, you try a head and arm.
Yeah.
As a man, they're going to take you back and choke you out. Yeah. Simple as that. But yeah.
Well,
women's
Ronda
MMA.
Rousey and Liz Carmouche. She was, Ronda's thing was always get that headlock and then hip toss, get a girl to the ground, and then, you know, get her in an arm bar.
Why does that work on women, but not men?
Neck strength,
probably. Yeah, but their heads and necks are even smaller, so they can slide out of it easier. You know what I mean?
I think it really works. I think what we saw in the Ronda Rousey fight with Liz Carmouche took her back and almost choked her out.
Yeah.
And if Liz was the Liz of today, she probably would have choked her out.
Sure.
You know, she just wasn't quite experienced enough at the time. I think the reason why you're seeing it more in women's MMA is because although the level is very high with like Valentina Shevchenko and Yona, you know, Jacek and Cyborg, the level of the champions is very high. There's still the lower levels.
Absolutely.
Nowhere near. You could watch a guy on an undercard that's fighting on Fight Pass who's a fucking world-class demon in the UFC,
sure.
Who's a man. The women, you're still, there's way less of them, and the competition's not as strong.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't been doing it as long.
Right.
The talent pool isn't as big.
Right.
You know,
women aren't as interested in it.
I was just about to say, the percentage of men interested in pursuing martial arts and mixed martial arts, as opposed to the percentage of women, way lower.
Right.
I don't know what the percentage is of men. If we said it's 50, just for the sake of the argument, women, it's going to be 5%.
Yeah, if that.
If that.
It's 5% probably men.
If my wife said, Michael, I'm going to start training because I want to be an MMA fighter, I say, pack your bags, get out. I say, shut the hell up, make me a sandwich. What are you talking about? Come on. Fucking, you're going to be an MMA fighter, are you? Ooh.
Oh, imagine watching the mother of your children get head kicked.
It's crazy. So, my Thai boxing coach, actually, you mentioned Vinny Shoreman at the start. He used to be in business with Vinny. Daz Morris, very, very good friend of mine. He was my Thai boxing coach.
Shout out to Vinny Shoreman.
Shout out to Daz Morris. And his girlfriend, he was cornering his you know, the mother of his children. She was a Thai boxer, Cassie. And shout out Cassie, no disrespect, you know. But to be cornering your loved one, that you're in a relationship, and she got knocked out cold in a Thai boxing fight. I was like, wow, Daz, how do you do that? And, you know, the mental strength to understand that this is a different relationship. She's the student and the teacher, and this is just the way it is. I mean, that takes a lot. I don't think I could do that. It's incredible.
Well, it takes a different kind of woman to want to do that, right? That kind of woman. The worst thing I think you could ever do is take a woman who wants to fight and tell her no. You know?
Sure, yeah, because she's going to find a way.
Like, if you're dating Valentina Shevchenko, you got
good luck with that.
Good luck with that one.
You're going to get spinning kicked to the midsection, to the balls, okay?
She's a fucking monster, isn't she?
She's great.
She's one of the quickest spinning back kicks I've ever seen.
There's
so
not
fast.
Too many, and I say this with the greatest of respect to women's mixed martial arts, and I respect everybody that applies themselves and is willing to get off a couch and make something of their life. So, you know, I'm not being overly judgmental, but there isn't too many that I really get excited for and that really thoroughly enjoy watching, you know, because as we just said, the level of skill isn't quite there yet.
Right.
You know, as I say, it's nothing to do with genders.
Right.
Why do I want to see a watered down product? If I can see these guys doing it at such an extreme level, I don't really want to watch smaller people that can't hit as hard with lesser technique.
Right.
You know what I mean? As I say, nothing to do with gender. But obviously, there's a few exceptions to the rule. And Shevchenko, Jan Jacek, Amanda Nunes, Cyborg.
Yes.
There's definitely amazing talent out there. There really is.
It's just a smaller pool.
It's a smaller
pool.
Like,
that fight this weekend was sensational.
Jacek
and Valentina. That was a very, very high-level fight.
Oh, it really was.
Excellent.
It really
was,
yeah. And Jan Jacek impressed me, you know, because she had a tough three rounds, fourth round. You know, she probably might have edged that fourth round, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's impressive that she still had the fight in her so late in the fight.
Valentina's just too strong
too
and
big.
Too good of a grappler. And, yeah, And bigger, physically bigger. Like you see her back,
we can see it.
Traps,
you can see
everything.
It when they're against each other. Jan Jacek's very slim, very slender, and she's Shevchenko has muscle on her.
Well, Shevchenko was successful at 135.
There you go.
That's a big gap between 35 and 115 where Jan Jacek.
And the reason Jan Jacek went up to 125 is because she couldn't get her belt back at 115. Yeah. And I say that with the absolute greatest of respect, you know.
Well, a lot of it was the weight cut was crushing her, and then she didn't have to cut weight for 125, but on the flip side, you're fighting a bigger, stronger woman than Valentina.
No, exactly. If she was fighting another strawweight, went up to 125, maybe things would be different. But that was always, on paper, a bad matchup.
Yes, I agree.
In my opinion.
Yeah, it went down the way I thought it was going to go down.
Yeah, same here.
There's a lot of fights. But the main event, man, the main event was one of those fights where I was like, I don't know.
Max and Ortega. Yeah,
I was like, if Max, and if it goes to the ground and Max gets caught up in something, I mean, Ortega's got the nastiest fucking submissions in that featherweight division.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I didn't know. I mean, as I said, I favored Max. I thought Max was going to do it, but
I did as well.
There's just something about Brian Ortega. I mean, just looking at him, he looks like a fucking killer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's big for the division. He's calm. He has that presence, you know? I don't know, he has just a look on his face that wants to snap your neck off at a moment's notice.
He's going to learn. He's going to learn from that fight.
Of course.
There's a lot going on in that fight to learn from in terms of his movement, in terms of just trying to handle Max's barrage and the pressure that he puts on you.
Well, he's only young, so that should be a massive motivator for him. Because when you go away and you win fights, it's great. There's no better feeling than winning fights, and I'm telling you this like you don't know, but you know this. But, you know, when you're winning fights, it's great, and you go away and you don't really change anything. Because everything's going good, you know. But when you lose, then you're like, okay, shit. I don't want to make a habit of this. Was he undefeated? I think he was. Undefeated, that was his first loss. So now he's going to say, okay, what can I do to ensure that I don't start getting more losses?
Yeah.
You know, he wants to be the champion. Like, my first loss was to Rashad Evans. And then I remember on the day of the weigh-in, he was sat in the sauna killing himself, doing his usual thing. And the team that I was with that shall remain nameless back then, they all wanted to eat Chinese food. So I was like trying to order the most healthiest thing in the Chinese restaurant that I could. So I was eating noodles and drinking fucking Sprite, you know, on the day of the weighing.
Jesus Christ.
Because when I was at 205, I didn't cut weight at all, you know. So I remember, you know, and I still weighed in. Another time when I fought Elvis Sinisek, well, back in the day, it was my first fight in Manchester, and I was getting tickets for everybody. You know, loving it, really, loving the attention. It was my first time, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I'll get you tickets. Talk about a fucking pain in the ass. It was the last.
Tickets is a pain in the ass.
Oh, my God, because you've got to get the money off the people. Then you've got to get the ticket. Then you've got to do the transaction. This is day of the fight, you know what I mean? I remember being on my knees day of the fight with hundreds of tickets and cash everywhere. I'm like, oh my God, why did I do this? Oh no, sorry, it was the day of the weighing, pardon me.
Okay.
Anyway, and I was so stressed out with it, and I drove home. I thought I'll sleep in my own bed the night before the weighing, pardon me. And I'm driving home, and I was so stressed out, and I was hungry. I hadn't eaten all day because I forgot. I was too stressed. And as I'm driving along the freeway, I don't really eat Burger King, but I saw the sign for Burger King and I was starving. I thought, fuck it. So I pull off. And I get a triple Whopper with cheese and bacon, fries, and a large Coke.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there, and you know the noise that it makes when you get to the bottom? That sound. As it went, what am I doing? I'm fucking weighing in tomorrow. Holy shit. Because I'm so stressed out with the goddamn tickets, I forgot all about it. So I'm like, crap. So fortunately, I just stepped on the scale, no problem. And with Rashad Evans, same thing. I just stepped on the scale. So after that, I was like, okay, what can I change? Well, I'm not making the sacrifices I could be, you know, to be as successful as possible. So that was, you know, moved down to middleweight. And Ortega, you know, he's not going to drop weight. He doesn't need to. But
no, he doesn't need to.
He can work on some things, you know. He can learn. Simple as that.
Yeah, he most certainly can. I mean, he's got tremendous jiu-jitsu. And his boxing is very good as well. But, you know, when you experience that kind of a fighter, when you experience that kind of a champion like Max Holloway, you understand that there's areas where you're exposed. There's areas where you have holes, and you have areas where you can't compete with him and as successfully as you have been with previous fighters. So that's a learning experience, and I'm sure he'll be better because of it.
I would say because of the third round, then yeah, you know, he certainly made it competitive in the third round. Yeah. He landed a couple of good shots. Because I was going to say, you know, in some circumstances, it doesn't matter. you can go away, work your ass off. You're never going to beat that guy.
Right.
You know what I mean? All the work, all the coaches, spend all the money, dedicate your fucking life, go live in a monastery in fucking China, do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. You're never going to beat that guy. But in the third round, he kept him honest. He landed some good shots. So I wouldn't say that's necessarily applicable. You know, but certainly got to do some work, you know,
yeah,
in the striking department.
Yeah, in the striking department, and I'm sure in the wrestling department as well.
Sure.
You know, he got him down briefly, but Max did a fantastic job of stuffing it, getting back up to his feet, you know, retaining, you know.
Sure. I mean, I don't want to speak out of turn. I did find it somewhat curious. Is it Henna Gracie?
Yes.
Henna Gracie giving him the boxing advice in the corner.
Yeah,
I found that somewhat curious.
Yeah,
you know, when I had my fights, Jason Perillo, if the fight was on the feet, he was giving the instructions. When the fight hit the floor, Brady Fink took over.
Yeah,
you know, and if there was elements, you know, they knew their elements in the corner. You know, he'd say his bit, boom, you go. You know, no disrespect to Henry Grace, he's done amazing things with Brian Ortega by everything I see online. You know, congratulations. You know, but when you're getting outstruck, I don't really want advice from a jiu-jitsu coach.
Right. No, that's a good point. It's a very good point. You know, it's interesting. Like you had a great situation with Jason Perillo and the other coaches that you worked with. And sometimes a young fighter needs like a mastermind, right? You need like a Matt Hume or a Firas Zahabi, someone who could put it all together for you. A John Crouch, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was also going to say, and this is probably, well, by all accounts, it is what Henner is to Ortega, a mentor as well.
Yes.
It does seem like he's his mentor. So for that, you know, maybe I shouldn't have quite said it in the words that I did use. You know what I mean? Yeah. It seems like that is his mentor, his father figure, whatever it is. So there's a reason why he is there. But for sure, bring on an expert, you know, in those areas, a specialist.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a crazy world, the world of fights.
In mixed martial arts, you know, I mean, as I said, there's a lot of fakes.
There's a lot of that, and there's a lot of it works good now, but then when you fight a world-class fighter, you realize why there was holes in that.
Yeah, you'll find out pretty quick.
Yeah.
You know, when you got a coach that's never... Now, you don't have to have real-life combat experience to be a good coach, but it helps. It certainly helps, and it helps the fighter really trust the advice that they're giving you. You know, for a fighter to be standing there and telling you to throw combinations, have you ever been in there? You ever experienced what it's like to have another guy trying to take your head off every time, and you're going to talk shit to me?
Did you see the Mike Perry video?
No.
Platinum Mike Perry? It's fucking,
no, I know who Mike Perry is.
It's a great video.
What did he
of
do?
People telling him like when you're fighting, and the coach is like, go, 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 go. He's like, I'm not trying to get fucking hit right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's
a
what
great
it is.
Video
no,
too,
I know.
Mike, you know, he's an intense guy, and he's talking about it, and he's like, we're faking, we're fainting, we're trying to make our way in, but no one wants to make a move because no one wants to get clipped first. And
yeah, well, I remember, you know, I mean, when I fought Rashad Evans, it wasn't the most action-packed fight, and when I watched it back, I was like, fuck.
Right.
Why didn't I just go for it a little bit more? And then I'm like, oh, because I remember. Because every time I took a step forward, woof, I felt the wind of the punches nearly taking my head off.
Yeah.
When you sit, even myself, when you sit and watch, you're like, why aren't I doing more? But then you take yourself back to when you were in there, and you're like, that was why.
Yeah.
That was why, you know?
It's such a tricky situation, and the fight game evolves. The styles evolve, and the way guys pursue fights evolves. It's really interesting to watch. You know, you see a guy like Mighty Mouse who does things different than anybody else, and you go, oh, well, look how this motherfucker does it. You know,
for sure.
It's a sport where you were incredibly fortunate in that you got to not just be there when it was exploding, but you got to be a part of the explosion.
Sure.
You know, I mean,
agreed. Absolutely. I mean,
so like 2006, you were in the Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah, 2005. I flew out. It was December 2005.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy, right?
Crazy, man. It really was. It was good times.
That's when it was just popping.
Oh, yeah. I remember when The Ultimate Fighter first came out, and it was on Bravo TV in England. Well, same as here. And I said to my wife, I was like, check this out. And she's like, I can't watch it. I'm like, why? Because if you were on there, you'd win the thing. So I don't want to watch it. It's not fair, Michael. You should be on there. And then lo and behold, you know, about 6 months later, they were looking for two Englishmen. And we went down to Earl's Court for auditions. And the great thing was, at that time, I was 10-0. I was the Cage Warriors champion, Cage Warriors champion, and FX3 champion, as well as the British heavyweight kickboxing champion as well. And everyone that was auditioning for the light heavyweight, I'd knocked them all out in the first round. Of course, you know, true to my style, I made, you know, Dana fully aware of that. But yeah, it was crazy, man. I couldn't believe it. You know, it was nuts. I'd never been to America. Next minute, I'm on some fucking reality TV show in a mansion in Las Vegas. You know, it was a great time. It was. It really was.
What was it like being separated from your family for 6 weeks and doing that show? And
very hard. Very difficult, of course. But I was there for a reason, you know, and so I was the greater good. You know, I said, yeah, of course, it sucks. It sucks being away. It sucks missing time, missing birthdays, all that type of stuff. But if you're doing it for a reason, then you know, you just got to be mature about it. My wife always was. The kids understand. You know, yeah, it's not good being away from home, but I'm working on something here. You know, trying to set us up. Come on. Do me a favor. Understand, you know.
Well, it worked out.
Yeah, they were always great, you know.
Yeah, it worked out.
It did. No regrets. I mean, maybe a few.
Yeah, but you know what, man? There's no way to not have them.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no perfect path. That's one of the crazy things about fighting. You zig when you should have zagged, you get hit.
That's it.
That's part of the game. That's
what
it is.
That really is the sport, you know? It's such a cliche thing to say. So many ways to win and lose. But there really is, you know? And as you say, you zig when you should have zagged. The smaller gloves, you know, the takedowns. That's the problem. When you're fighting a wrestler, it's such a pain in the ass, you know? Because I'm a better striker than most of these wrestlers, but when they're trying to take you down, it changes everything.
Right.
Because you go out and you're like, okay, this motherfucker's just trying to take me down. That's all he's trying to do. So I'm going to stand here and I'm going to wait for him to shoot and then I'm going to stuff his takedown. Because I'm waiting for a takedown, I'm not thinking about the hands, and then douche, then you get caught with a shot. You know, you're like, what the fuck? You're supposed to be going for a takedown, not punching me in the face. And then all of a sudden, your striking's terrible because you're totally thrown off by the wrestling. So it's a very, very difficult sport. It really is.
Another one of your most impressive victories was the second fight with Dan Henderson, because you got hit with some fucking bombs in that fight, but you refused to go out.
Yeah.
You refused to be stopped in that fight.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
That was a display of willpower in a lot of ways, because I remember watching those big shots from Henderson land, and I mean, they were on the edge. I mean, you were on the edge going out.
Oh, I mean, for sure. Absolutely. I mean, I remember he hit me. I went down. He was swarming on me, hit me with some elbows. But I remember I was always fine, but I was like, holy shit. You know, that was what hit me there. And then I managed to get myself back to my feet and had blood pouring out of my face and whatnot. Of course, second round, same thing happened. And he had two big moments in the fight. Two big shots, but they were big moments. But you don't win a 25-minute fight by landing two shots, you know. But they were big shots, fair play to him. But, you know, I refused to quit there because, you know, obviously going into that fight, I talked a bit of shit, like always.
Yeah.
And you can lie to everybody. You can lie to the media. You can lie to the press. You can lie to your family. Lie to your coaches. Well, it's not necessarily lies, but you can ooze bravado and this and that. But you can't lie to yourself. You know, when you're led in bed at night and your head's on the cushion, you know, you can't bullshit yourself, you know. And day of the fight, because the fight was at 6 a.m, day of the fight, I'm led on my bed trying to just have a nap because it was going to be a long night, obviously. And I couldn't sleep. And all I was thinking, human nature, last time I stepped into an octagon with this guy, I was fucking out cold for a long time. My brain was scrambled eggs for a long time after that fight. And as I say, you can lie to everybody else, but now the fight was getting close and it's in my hometown and it's my first title defense and all this. I'm like, shit. I know I'm better than this guy, but fuck, last time didn't end well. So I was getting a little worked up, and I remember I was at the arena and I was kind of, you know, being a little edgy, a little snappy with people, and there was no need for it. And then I just stopped. I started laughing, and Perillo said, what are you laughing at? I said, well, what's the worst that's going to happen? If I lose, what's the word? I'm going to lose a fight. It's happened before, so why am I stressing myself out over it? And I just started laughing, and after that, I was fine. But I definitely had a sore face the next day after that one, for sure.
Yeah, but you got through the fire.
Yeah, no, I did, and I felt great. The only problem was in the fifth round, because this cheekbone had swollen. It was on my good side. He shattered the cheekbone on my good side. And it swelled up so much. I could hardly see out of that eye. This eye's fucked as well. So in the fifth round, I'm like trying to like get a certain angle where I could even see the guy. Do you know what I mean? It was a nightmare, you know. Jesus but yeah, got the job done, fortunately.
Is there anything that like is on the horizon in terms of like medical science that you're looking at in terms of being able to fix your eyes?
Not that I know of. I spoke to doctors about it, you know, because I was always curious what could be done, but I don't think in my lifetime there is. But the reason I retired was at the Gastelum fight, because I was cleared to fight, and the doctors were always like, we don't really advise it, but you are cleared. You've passed the test just by the skin of your teeth. And for me, that was all well and good. You got to do your medical. The most stressful part of all of that was when you got to go do a full training camp now, then fly somewhere, and you're going to see another doctor, a commissioned doctor at the weigh-in, right? And you don't know what this doctor's going to be like. You don't know if he knows anything about eyes. You don't know if he wants to be a hero. You don't know if he wants to make fucking press, the guy that pulled the main event. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Very, very stressful time. So for me, the fight was always the easy part. The hard part was just fucking making it to the octagon. And I go to the weigh-ins and I get cleared. I'm like, argh! The feeling was like, okay, we're good. The fight's on. Because I didn't know the fight was on until I got past the commission doctor.
How many different fights did you have to go through like that?
About, I think it's about 12, something like
12
that.
12 fights with eye problems.
I'm not sure if it's 12, something like that. Hold on. Belcher, Kung Lee. No, Belcher, Tim Kennedy, Kung Lee, Rockhold, CB, Talis Lattis, Anderson Silva, Luke Rockhold, Dan Henderson, GSP, Gastelum. 11. 11 fights. Yeah, wow. Yeah. So that was stressful. And then, obviously, you know, I lost the belt. And in my mind, I'd retired, you know. I just hadn't made it formal yet. And I was driving out for lunch with my wife and my in-laws. They were in town. And we heard on Sirius XM Fight Club, the Luke Thomas show, he was talking about Anderson Silva testing positive for steroids. And they needed a replacement. And I said, shall I do it? And they were like, what were you talking about? So I text Dana right then and there. And a week later, I'm on a plane to Shanghai. No training. I haven't done anything. I'm
no
like,
training.
Well, I mean, I trained. As soon as I found out about that, right. You know, I mean, I sparred a few times and then got on a plane and went out there. And, yeah, you know, God bless him. He got me. But then after the fight, because, you know, as I said, you know, I was cleared to fight, but the doctors always said, we don't recommend it because if anything happens to your good eye, you're gonna be in a real problem. And I was like, well, so many fighters in the UFC have long careers and they don't get detached retinas. Okay, it's a very, not rare, but it's pretty rare. You don't hear about it too much. So I'm thinking, okay, well, the lightning's already struck. Okay, lightning isn't gonna strike twice. You know what I mean? I'm not that fucking unlucky. Anyway, so we have the Gastelum fight and then we go to an after party in Shanghai and in some club. And I'm in the club, and every time I look that way, it still does it to this day. Every time I look that way, tsh, 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 like a bolt of lightning, like
you
a
see
flash.
It right now when you do that?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, like, what do you see?
It's art.
Like someone's taking
flash.
A picture?
Yeah, yeah. And I was in this club, and every time I'm looking, it's doing that, and I start freaking out, because I know, you know, I've got a history of symptoms with eye problems and whatever, and I start telling myself, I don't believe this. I've got a detached retina in my good eye and I'm freaking out. And I don't want to be in a nightclub around a bunch of fucking dickheads anyway, all drinking. I hate nightclubs. So I said, oh, I'm just going to go to the toilet and restroom. And I was leaving, you know, but I just wanted to be by myself. And I left there and shed a little tear in the taxi. I didn't want to be sat in a fucking nightclub crying, because if people see me crying, they're going to be like, oh, he's crying because, bless him, he lost a fight to Gastelum. I was like, no, I'm not crying because I lost a fight to Gastelum. I'm crying because I might be going fucking blind here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I jump in the taxi. I go back to my hotel. And then later on, Perillo and a few guys came back to see if I was okay. And, you know, whatever, we just carried on talking and having a few drinks in the room and forgot all about it. And, you know, I turned into a bit of a messy one in Shanghai, forgot all about my eye. And the next thing, I'm on a plane flying home. And I'd forgotten all about it. I fall asleep on the plane. I wake up halfway home, probably flying over the Pacific somewhere. The plane's pitch black. And then I open my eye. And it starts doing it again. I'm like, shit. because I've forgotten all about it. So I'm trying to get on Wi-Fi on the plane, trying to find something about it, trying to Google it, what it could be and all the rest of it. And the Wi-Fi wouldn't work, and I'm going up and I'm trying to beg the air hostess, you know, please, please, I need to get on Wi-Fi. I have to. I didn't tell her why. And she said, no, it's down right now. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Anyway, so I land, I call my eye doctor straight away. I tell him, I say, listen, I think I've got a detached retina in my good eye. Why do you say that? I tell him the story. He says, don't worry, don't worry. You know, you'll be okay. So I go see an eye doctor the next day, and he says, well, I tell him the issue. He says, why do you say that? And I tell him why. I said, so do you think it's a detached retina? He says, well, it certainly sounds like one. I'm like, fuck me. He says, okay, we're going to put some drops in your eyes. Everything's going to go blurry, and I only see a tiny bit out of this eye. And I'm like, oh, I make a stupid joke as my defense mechanism. I'm like, oh, I guess I better get used to this view, eh? Ha ha. And the doctor's like, well, we don't know that just yet. And I'm like, fuck me. Do you know what I mean? That's not the answer I was expecting. Anyway, turns out, didn't have a detached retina. I had a partial vitreous detachment. So you have your cornea here, your retina at the back, and in between what's called vitreous fluid, and millions of fibers connect to the retina to send the message, I think. If I'm getting it wrong, I'm sorry, doctors. And in your 60s, that just slides off the retina and detaches naturally. Maybe in your 60s, 70s, who knows? But as you get older, through old age, it just slides off. It can detach due to trauma. So that's what happened to me. But it had partially detached. So, but the problem was when these fibers are pulling, they can cause the retina to tear. So they were like, well, we need to keep an eye on this and blah 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 blah. So anyway, long story short, after that, I thought, fuck this, no, ain't worth it.
And have they done anything to the eye since?
No. And there's nothing to be done. There's nothing to be done.
Nothing can be done.
No, yeah, and they're fine with it. They're happy with it. It's okay. But it was, for me, it was a step too far. Yeah, I pushed it as far as I was willing to push. In fact, I'm a liar. I was supposed to fight Rashad in London earlier this year, but we couldn't, you know, agree on the deal terms with the UFC. Fight never materialized, and I was flying up to New York to do my podcast with Lewis, and on the plane I'm watching this movie called The Journeyman, and it's Paddy Considine. It's about a boxer who's a world champion, and at the end of it he wins the fight, and then he has severe brain damage, and it's a very, very sad movie. You should check it out. It's really, really powerful, very, very good. Anyway, I watched that and I thought, that's it, I'm done. That was it. So I got off the plane, we started our podcast, I said, boom, I've got an announcement, that's it, over.
Good for you.
It was the best decision I ever made. You know, I've been very, very happy ever since.
Yeah, you have options. I mean, you had a long, great career. You have options.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, no regrets. You know, I mean, it was a wonderful ride. I loved it. I never thought a young kid doing martial arts and you know, a guy that just liked to have a scrap when he was a kid could take it this far. And that's the beautiful thing about the UFC these days. You know, if you're of that certain mindset, that certain character, you like a bit of rough and tumble, you don't mind getting a punch in the face here and there, and you're willing to go for it, you can make a living. You can make it, you know. When I was younger, I used to do a lot of professional kickboxing, but I never looked at it as a career because it wasn't back then. But now it's great, you know. It really is a career, a viable career.
Well, especially for a guy like you who's a good talker, who understands how to break fights down, and you can make this transition. It's one of the things that I really like about the UFC, that they've allowed these fighters, like, you know, I do a lot of commentary now with Paul Felder and Daniel Cormier, Dominic Cruz, and they've given these guys these options. Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
As I was saying before, but that was one of the things that scared me as well as a kid, because you're in gyms all over the world, and you see amazing talent everywhere. Mm-hmm. Amazing talent. And, you know, they're sleeping in the cars, or they're sleeping on a couch at someone's friend's house, you know, and they're struggling to pay the bills, and they're driving a shitty beat up piece of shit, you know. And it's a shame. And I see them and my heart goes out to them. And for whatever reason, they don't get the breaks. They don't look right. They can't put it together on fight night. The nerves get the better of them. Who knows what it is, but they just don't make it. Yeah. You know, and fighting such a cruel, vicious sport. It really is. So that's why when people, I get asked all the time, do you want your son to do it? I'm like, well, no, not really. The way I see it, I fought, so he doesn't have to. Yeah. But if he wants to, He's the number 4th ranked wrestler in California.
I've seen the videos. He's a beast.
He's a beast. If he wanted to, of course I'll support him. My father supported me ridiculously. If it wasn't for my father, I wouldn't be here either. But I wouldn't wish it on him. I wouldn't wish the life of a fighter on anybody because it's so unpredictable. And just because you're good and just because you can take a punch and just because you're an animal in there doesn't mean you're going to be a success, you know? It's going to be the perfect storm.
What I tell young fighters is when they say, I'm thinking about trying MMA, I go, don't do it.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about it, don't do it. If you tell me you're obsessed with it and you want to be a world champion, then I say, go ahead.
Sure, absolutely.
Give it a chance.
Yeah.
But if you're not obsessed, there's some motherfuckers out there that are they're living it 24/7, all day long.
Oh, for sure. They're and this is a thing, you see a lot of young fighters now, they're obsessed with the image. You know what I mean? Because it's on TV, it's cool, and it's got a lot of popularity now. So a lot of people want to do it. As I say, there's pretenders in coaches. And there's pretenders in fighters as well.
Sure.
A lot of people, they want to be Conor McGregor, or they want to be Chuck Liddell or whatever, and they're all fucking wearing tap out and having mohawks and stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
And they're talking about, for this camp, I'm going to bring in this guy. It's a fucking camp. You don't have training camps at the start of your career.
Right.
At the start of your career, you train Monday to Friday. You have a fight at the weekend. If you win, you're back in the gym fucking Monday. You know what I mean?
Right.
You fight every few weeks. When I was starting, I think I had 6 fights in the first year, probably 5 kickboxing fights. You're trying to build momentum. You're not doing camps.
Right.
I don't want to hear any young fighter saying to me, for this camp, I'm focusing on my wrestling. It's like, shut the fuck up. You've had 2 amateur fights. You're not doing a training camp, buddy.
Right.
You're training. That's it. You know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, listen, Mike, thanks for doing this, man. I'm glad
we
did it, and we could do it again anytime you'd like. Tell everybody about your podcast with Luis Gomez. Shout out to Luis.
Yeah, absolutely. Big shout out, Luis. I think he's listening.
Hilarious guy.
Oh, hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. Believe you me.
iTunes,
all that shit.
YouTube as well?
Yeah, okay, YouTube on there. Michael Bisping podcast or Believe You Me podcast. iTunes, all that crap. Check it out. Or don't, couldn't give a fuck. If you like it, if you like what I've said for the last hour or two, check it out. If not, kiss my ass.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate
right on,
it,
Joe.
Man. Thank you.
Appreciate
Michael
it.
Bisping, ladies and gentlemen.